and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. I also got DC on the line, and I got Tia B coming in shortly. today we're going to be discussing mostly about the United States election. Today is Election Day, November 8th, 2016. We will be talking about the, you know, different things that are going on today, or should I say tonight, with the elections, mainly between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, two racist suspects. I think D.C. has already confirmed that they're both racist, but I'll let him speak to that. a few topics. We're going to probably touch on when were blacks allowed to vote and why, and kind of get into some details on our position here. Also, does elections matter in the system of racism? We also might touch on global elections, the United Nations, just different things around the Europeans implementing these systems worldwide to manage and maintain the planet. Should black people have their own political system? We also will probably touch on voter suppression and redistricting, and also how these things impact our daily lives, et cetera, et cetera. So, DC, you on?
Yes, sir. Can yes, I be sir. Heard?
All right. Is T on as well?
Yep, that's T.
Yes.
All right, yep. All right.
So we are ready to go. Paradox already said, I have already determined that the two candidates that will be running America taking over for the black victim of racism, President Barack Hussein Obama, the people that are now taking over for him will be clearly racist. And they will be able to do what they do, practice racism. So for us, this give us a perfect time. I would imagine that is divine intervention to give us this time to share with everyone that's in the audience, that's with the Black Talk Network, that is listening right now, that may be conflicted about what they're seeing. We'd like to let them know that you do not have control over this election. Let me repeat. You do not have control over this election, contrary to what you do believe. And for me to kind of reiterate the point, I know that people do have an understanding about what the Electoral College is, but I thought that it would be very, very, very important to give a definition to what the Electoral College is, what the standard is, and then we can kind of go into a little bit more detail. We will open up for anybody that want to call in and actually have any comments, or if they have anything that they want to add to the discussion. This goes out to anyone. If there's any body that are actual host on Black Talk Network that would like to call in and discuss, please feel free. You know, we are open to open dialogue, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to probably say some things that's going to make some people upset. But hey, BGQ, I am a victim of racism. I am declared that, and that's my stance based off the reality that I and the paradigm that I've been born into, and that's my my point of view henceforth. We are good for 2+ hours today. Is that correct, fellas? Mr. Reed, make sure that I'm correct on that.
Yeah, we're going for 3.
Okay, so we're going to be on for a while. I guess we can go ahead and give out the number before I read the definition of Electoral College. Mr. Reed, is there a new number that we're giving out to everyone?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
I believe
it. Please read that for us, Paradox.
I believe it's... I thought I had it up. First can call, podcast for... Is it 857? I think it's 857-957-1145, if I'm not mistaken. And just dial, then you can just dial the standard 549-032 pound 6 and 6 star 6 and 1.
All right, so there you go. Like we said, please feel free to join the discussion at any time. We are open for calls, and we're going to be here for most of the duration. It looks like there's going to be some consternation and some nail biting, depending on who people have chose to participate with and vote for. So, this should be a very interesting night, very interesting evening. But first thing first, let me go ahead and read the definition of Electoral College. The Electoral College is a set of electors who are selected to elect a candidate to a particular office. Oftentimes, let me just make sure I get this correct here. Oftentimes, the body that elects the president and the vice president of the United States every 4 years. Citizens of the United States don't directly elect the president. Never repeat. Citizens of the United States don't directly elect the president or vice president. Instead, they choose the electors who usually pledge to vote for particular candidates. How many people out there know who their electors are in their state? District. For us, it would be the district, since we are in the DMV area. Some of us that do stay in Washington, D.C. There will be 3 people, if I'm not mistaken. And I think one of them is the Honorable Eleanor Holmes. She's been holding it down for at least 30-plus years. She's been in office since I can remember. And she's been trying to get statehood for Washington, D.C. Moving on. The number of electors in each state is equal to the number of members of Congress to which the state is entitled, while the 23rd Amendment grants the District of Columbia the same number of electors as the least populous state, which currently sits at 3. Therefore, there are currently 538 electors. So that's where you see that map that's breaking down. Those are actual people. So I know sometimes people are kind of confused. Well, why they got these numbers when they show these states? You know, why is it like 55 in the state of California? Mm-hmm. So it's 55 people that are choosing a president. You know, you can just look at it as, you know, the hidden hand, so to speak. So, you know, most of the time when people look at the map, I really think that there's just like, it's not connecting. when people see this, they'd be like, oh, you know, oh, that must mean that it's, well, oh, they said it's an electoral college, so I guess, you know, all our votes, you know, guess basically just make these people cast the vote. So I'm getting to that. So let me just continue right along. Therefore, there are currently 538 electors corresponding to the 435 representatives and 100 senators.
Yeah.
Plus 3 additional electors from the District of Columbia. The Constitution bars any federal official, elected or appointed, from being an elector. Let me repeat, the Constitution bars any federal official, elected or appointed, from being an elector. All states except for Maine and Nebraska have chosen electors on a winner-take-all basis. Since the 1880s, under winner-take-all, the state has all electors pledged to the presidential candidate who wins the most votes in that state. Maine and Nebraska use the congressional district method, selecting one elector within each congressional district by popular vote and selecting the remaining two electors by a statewide popular vote. Although no elector is required by federal law to honor a pledge, there have been very few occasions when an elector voted contrary to a pledge. Never repeat. This is very, very important. And I think that what we're seeing right now may be the beginning of that. I think there's some people that's voting contrary to what the popular vote is. So although no elector is required by federal law to honor a pledge, which means that these people have their own mind. So if they want to go in and sabotage an election and go against their population vote, whatever they vote in their particular state. So if a particular state goes red, for instance, and you get enough of those people that are, I'm pretty sure these people know each other, right? We're confirming that the people that are electors for each state are pretty chummy. They pretty close in their group, right? We'd admit, we agree to that, fellas.
Okay. Yeah, I agree to that.
So if these people come to each other's house, they eat together, they chop it up, or whatever the case may be, if they split and say, hey, you know, it's like going to trial or to a jury, they say, hey, you know, let's go ahead and flip this thing, then they can actually do that. They don't need all of them to do it, but they can actually go against the pledge. So they don't have to vote a certain way. But we don't know this stuff. This is not something that we talk about. We don't examine the Electoral College. We let these TV pundits sit up here and tell you that, hey, your vote matters, right? Your vote is everything. Go to the polls. Anyway, you can move ahead. We'll get into that later. Although no elector is required by federal law to honor a pledge, there have been very few occasions when an elector voted contrary to a pledge. The 12th Amendment, oh boy, here we go with these amendments, boy. All these amendments, 12th, 13th, 14th, man, they did some work on these amendments, boy. When they got to that, when they got to that 11th Amendment, they went to work, man, in specifying how a president and a vice president are elected, requires each elector to cast one vote for president and another vote for vice president. The candidate who receives an absolute majority of electoral colleges, currently 270, for the office of president or vice president is elected to that office. The 12th Amendment provides for what happens if the electoral college fails to elect the president or vice president. If no candidate receives a majority for president, then the House of Representatives will select the president. So it still doesn't go to the people. It still doesn't go to the popular vote. With each state delegation, instead of each representative having only one vote, if no candidate receives the majority for vice president, then the Senate will select the vice president, with each senator having one vote. On four occasions, most recently in the 2000 presidential election, everybody remember that, right? The Electoral College system has resulted in the election of a candidate who did not receive the most popular votes in the election. So everybody remember the real popular election in 2000, where Al Gore clearly won the more popular votes, but George Bush still won the presidency. Moving forward. The Constitutional Convention, I'm sorry, go ahead. Did anybody have any words on that? I want to just kind of get a couple of more things in after that, but that's real important when it comes down to black folks.
Let me give the correct phone number to call in.
Okay.
The new number is going to be 1-704-951-5030.
I'm sorry, Paradox. I just sent you a message. I just discovered a problem with that. It will only forward one call, and T, I believe, is using that one call that it allowed me to forward. So I'm still trying going to find a workaround for those people who are being charged 1 cent a minute by their phone carriers to call into a free conference line. So we do we do have to revert to back to the original number, 641-715-3660, participant code 54 90 32 pounds, *6 and 1. Sorry about that, Paradox.
Okay.
No, you good to go. We good to go. We can keep it rocking and rolling. So did you have any comments on that? Did you have any comments on that, T, or do you want me to keep rolling and then we just comment at the end?
Keep rolling. I like
All right, so let's go to the background. Let's go to the reason why there's an electoral college, because this is very, very important. And please remember, if you are a victim of racism, if you are from the lineage of slaves, please remember where you stand. I don't care if you are from the Caribbean or if you're from here. You should know better, because we're talking about our relatives. But you know, I'm not going to go too hard on us, because I do know or understand that we have been held out of information and dialogue when it comes down to these things. But let me just give a little bit of background on why they began the Electoral College. During the Constitutional Convention in 1787, used the Virginia Plan as the basis for discussions, as the Virginia delegation had proposed at first. The Virginia Plan called for the Congress to elect the president. Delegates from a majority of states agreed to this mode of election. However, a committee formed to work out various details, including the mode of election of the president, recommended instead that the election be by a group of people appointed among the states in the same numbers as their representatives in Congress. The formula for which has been resolved in lengthy debates, resulting in the Connecticut Compromise and the Three-Fifths Compromise. Let me repeat that. The formula for which has been resolved in lengthy debates, resulting in the Connecticut Compromise, right? And the Connecticut Compromise was an agreement that large and small states reached during the Constitutional Convention of 1787 that in part defined the legislative structure and representation that each state would have under the United States Constitution. So it retained that the biometrical legislature as proposed by Roger Sherman, along with the proposed representation lower house, but required the upper house to be weighed equally between each state. So basically what they're saying is, if you had a state that had so many people there, they wanted to kind of create this situation where there was a balance. Mm-hmm. So there wouldn't be this imbalance of people just always being able to elect their president. So you would have, like, say, like New York at that time, because of New York City, they still had the most people. So you can technically have someone from New York or from the Northeast, and you would have basically a rigged election, because all of those people that stayed in those areas at that particular time could just dominate an election. Anyway, moving forward, just give me one moment here. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. No, you good. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the Three-Fifths Compromise, and I hope that everybody understand what that means, but the Three-Fifths Compromise was a debate over whether, and if so, how slaves would be counted when determining a state's population for legislative representation and taxing purposes. So when anybody want to sit here and say that black people, you know, are not basically characterized in this particular country, that there is no particular history that's linking black people here, and the reason why there cannot be any resolution to this issue, I go directly to this particular thing here, where you have people deciding where we stand for the duration up until 2016. Like, this is written, like, they have basically sat down and said, we're going to decide how we're going to view these people for the duration. Like, this has to be, this has to be decided. So this is what we're going to do with their numbers. Moving forward, the committee member, Governor Morris, explained the reasons for the change. Among others, there were fears of intrigue if the president was chosen by a small group of men who met together regularly, as well as concerns for the independence of the president if he was elected by the Congress. Some delegates, including James Wilson and James Madison, preferred popular election of the executive. Let me repeat. Some delegates, including James Wilson and James Madison, preferred popular election of the executive. Madison acknowledged that while a popular vote would be ideal, it would be difficult to get a consensus on a proposal given the prevalence of slavery in the South. Here's one of his quotes. There was one difficulty, however, of a serious nature attending an immediate choice by the people. The right of suffrage, which is voting, was much more diffusive in the northern than the southern states, and the latter could have no influence in the election on the score of Negroes, black folk. The substitution of electors obviated this difficulty and seemed to be the whole to be liable to the fewest objections. And let me just go to how do we got to, let me see here. I think I hit on the main points, but let me go to this one here. I see something here that I wanted to kind of give a little bit more of a discussion on, and then we can kind of go over it a little bit. Now go ahead. What were you about to?
Did you find anything on why were we allowed to vote?
Why are we allowed to vote? You're talking about black people?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much, well, there's two different reasons why blacks were allowed to vote, especially at the advent of the end of the Civil War. Now, you had the Reconstruction part, which was basically allowing ex-slaves to vote, or male slaves, because women couldn't vote at that particular time. Because of the population, they needed to have black people actually end up voting. But I think that the same thing still remained. People were still classifying us as 3/5. So even though we was voting, we were still being classified as 3/5 of a human being up until that particular time. So that's even crazier.
Mm-hmm.
But did you guys have any? That's kind of like a detailed, long, drawn out definition of electoral college. But I wanted to kind of give a little context before we go deep into how the electoral college works. A lot of people talk about it. I think sometimes we talk about it, but we don't actually discuss some of the history and the reason why that was actually chosen as a way to elect presidents of this particular country. I just thought that it was really, really important to kind of get that definition out there, to kind of give it to people so they can have an understanding. They do vote. They do vote or they choose a particular elector to vote for them as for the president. So it's not actually you voting, it's you trusting another person to vote for you. And hopefully,
yeah, I think they call it
swings.
I think they
get that going your way. Go ahead.
Don't they call it like indirect? Indirect elections is what it's called.
Yeah, indirect. But I was talking to a victim earlier today, black woman, and she was concerned because she was fishing, of course, and she was just like, "Well, are you voting?" And I just kind of like wanted to kind of get my I lost all kinds of code, so I looked at her and I just kind of like wanted to just move on. But she was just like, "Well, are you going to vote? And this is going to be very important." So she went into the diatribe. I said, "Well, could you give me a reason why you think it's important to vote?" you know, I went that route, and you know, she's like, well, you know, your vote counts, and you know, it just need to be heard, and you know, she went with the whole cliche, and at the end of it, I just asked her one question. I said, well, do you know what the Electoral College is? She said, well, yeah, I know what that means. I know that that's. I said, well, do you have an understanding about what takes place? Like, you're voting, but you're not directly voting for the president. I mean, there's we have a situation where even in your lifetime during the 2000 election, someone won the popular vote and still lost. You know, so technically, it's not a numeric vote. It's up to the electors or the people that are chosen for the Electoral College to vote. And I know that word is very, very tricky, but, you know, I don't think that people really think of it like that. You're voting for someone else to vote for you, so it's not
technically. But like you said, overall within this system, as far as how they have their set up, generally speaking, it does work that way, but they have all these contingency plans and other things in play that can just change it, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of provisions and things that I mean, there's so many different rules and regulations that you would have to be basically a historian and a political scientist to get a complete breakdown of how it works.
Yeah,
you know, what you say on it, T? Ain't heard from you.
Just want to piggyback on. I know you guys are kind of getting into it, but I just want to kind of shed some more light on what you've already expounded upon, D, and that's in regard to the original creation of the Electoral College, which can be found in the U.S. Constitution of 1780, ratified in 1789, Article 2, Section 1. And the original intent of the Electoral College, was there were like four bullet points, I guess you could say, that the nation faced at the time. Now, you got to remember that it was only composed of, the U.S. was only composed of 13 large and small states at the time. And they were battling to try to, they didn't necessarily want a national government. You had people that wanted a stronger national government, and you had others that did not want, and they wanted to keep states' rights. So the states were obviously jealous of their own rights and powers, and somewhat suspicious of any central national government. You figure that roughly about 4 million people were spread up and down the Atlantic seaboard of these 13 original 13 colonies, which later became states. And there was really not a lot of transportation in terms of like we have now, like, you know, obviously no internet. They might have had some type of rail systems going on, but a lot of the transportation, the motor transportation, was most likely horseback, you know, carriages, whatnot, as far as mail delivery systems. And I'm not sure what year the telegraph was invented, but I believe that was in the 19th century. So that was another thing, you know, they did not have real-time systems like we have now that can translate, you know, tabulate, you know, hundreds of thousands of votes and feed them into a central database.
Right.
So that's something else to consider. Another thing is that in regard to political parties, there weren't really any national campaigns. I mean, most of the people came out of the states, and that's where they kind of got their origin. So the purpose of the Electoral College was to try to prevent bias from people voting strictly for candidates that were within their own states.
Yep.
And in fact, the Electoral College has some origins in the election of the Pope and the Roman College.
Mm-hmm.
which is interesting as well.
It's not only used in the U.S. like you said. It's not only used here in the United States. It's used in other places, another kind of different groups and things of that nature. Go ahead.
Right. Well, it's my understanding, though, as far as political systems, this is the only democracy, quote unquote, that uses the Electoral College system.
That's correct.
And I touch on the history of that, how it was created, because it's, you can see how seriously antiquated it is when people say, first of all, most people don't have an understanding of the Electoral College, and even when you do the research, it still leaves questions.
Mm-hmm.
So people thinking that it's based on your one vote equals one count are faulty in that regard. And really, no one really touches on this issue. If you want to consider that, no one really touches on the Electoral College. They just kind of assume that everyone knows what's going on. And so if you really wanted to have a direct democracy in this day and age, it wouldn't be difficult, because you have the systems and computer technology to support a one vote, one count type system. Because as you see, if you watch Fox News, CNN, ABC, it's all on TV right now, you can see how easy it is for them. They can zoom in on certain counties and they can tell you how many votes are in, the percentage of the votes, where the candidates stand. So they literally have the technology to do this. So then the question, I guess, becomes, well, why are we still using this system that's, 300-400 centuries old?
Can I say this? And I'm just, this is good in a lot of ways, and I think that, I know a lot of victims. I'm shocked, to be honest with you, as far as what things look like, and I know that it's still, pretty much early, but he has already flipped some states. I don't know if you guys are actually watching it or paying attention. But he's already flipped some states that they thought he didn't even have a chance in winning. And I just go back to, when did Dr. Welsing, Paradox, when did she tell us that, how long ago was that she said, when people was thinking that she was still quit? I remember this very succinct. It had to be like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, probably 20
she
months.
She sat there and said, I want to introduce you to your new president, Donald J. Trump. When he first started running, she knows this country. This country is racist. I mean, it's to the core, to the fabric of this country. For this to even be a discussion, it's not. You got two racists running. Don't get me wrong. You got two racists running. But when you hear people talk about Donald Trump, they talk like he's an anomaly. But the numbers says it all. The numbers. Look at the raw numbers. Just look at how many people are voting for this man. Now, either somebody's lying, right? Somebody told lies about who they're voting for. And it's just like Dr. Welsing said. She said there's going to be white people telling you that they're going to vote for Hillary and they're going to vote for Trump. I'm just looking at the raw numbers. I'm not talking about the Electoral College right now, but just the numbers and how things looking.
Well, the numbers, they seem like they're 20 million apiece right now.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is this was supposed to be,
Well, the thing is that 2012 election, I think 131 million people supposedly voted.
Right.
So they're at 40 million. He should at least get 50. I'm thinking he's going to get about 50 million people to vote. I think the Republicans that are going to vote for Hillary, I think that's always been a small number, but the TV hypes up stuff, of course, but if she that's not going to get her elected, I put it that way. It's going to be obviously the standard process that they go through. I don't think. Well, we'll see. We'll get into that later, I guess.
are you guys surprised about the numbers, or are you just this doesn't? This is what you guys kind of expect.
I think she's going to hit 300.
So you think this?
Go ahead.
I think she's going to hit 300.
So you think it's just showing this way, but then when California and the West rolls in, then that's going to be a wrap.
Oh yeah, this is it's early. We just talking about the East Coast. They just talking about the East Coast and the Midwest right now.
What were you about to say, T?
Well, I mean, in terms of numbers, you got to realize that elections serve just more than one purpose, and it's not simply just to elect or make the process of electing the next president. There's also a survey. It's the actual participation survey, right? Because you have to, in order for this system to operate at full capacity, you have to have participation at a certain level. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the numbers, I mean, if these numbers are accurate and all these people are participating in this so-called political process, then that serves as a
barometer.
Serves as a measuring, yeah, a barometer, mm-hmm. a measuring stick to see how people are, what their mindset is, what they're thinking. You know, do they buy yes. into this? It's like when you go on a job for the first time and they want your buy-in. You know, or they propose some new changes and they're like, T, I need your buy-in on this. You know, are you in? You know, you down with the team? That's so it serves more than one purpose. And so you got to look at the numbers more objectively and see that they have an overarching purpose rather than just one singular type of delivery.
Right.
So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think only about half the population votes, or a little bit less than half votes overall. Think about, I want to say it's 47% overall, I think.
As far as
voters, individual voters, I think it's about half the population, or a little bit less.
You know, I'm looking at the state of Virginia, and you know, it's so funny because, you know, the whole state is red except for Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
The whole state, man. I mean, it's just like.
But Northern Virginia is what's gonna get her to win the state of Virginia, though.
It's going. That's like the last. I think that's what they're tabulating right now.
Yeah, they
like,
come in last.
This would be like the last vestiges yeah. of her being able to basically get the actual state. So Virginia, you're talking Northern about Alexandria, Arlington, Crystal City,
Fairfax.
You know what I'm saying? Fairfax County.
That's going to get
all. Hold on, not all Fairfax though. Not all Fairfax.
So well, it's going to get her over 150,000 more votes though.
We'll see.
It's a ton of votes. Barack got 90,000 in Fairfax alone. She's only at 20,000 right now.
Right.
So we got a long way to go.
You have right. a caller.
Cool. You go ahead and put him through, Mr. Reed. Caller, welcome to the Code Breakers. Welcome to Election Night 2016.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'm actually very glad that you... Oh, I'm sorry, my name is Jay from Ohio. I'm definitely glad that you went over the Electoral College. I tried to explain it to some of my family members, and they still act like, you know, like what you were saying, oh, our vote still counts when it doesn't. I even tried to explain, I'm like, hey, we can vote for the color blue, but it all depends on the Electoral College, as what we've seen in the year 2000 when Gore had the popular vote and they still picked Bush the second or George W. Bush or whatever. So I just wanted to say that I definitely appreciate this show, and I'll mute myself.
No, I mean, I'd like to hear your opinion, if you don't mind sharing. This is up to you. Jay, if you would mind sharing an opinion. I thought it was interesting that you brought up the Electoral College. So have you been, you know, has there been a lot of people kind of like giving you grief about your views about voting? If you shared them with anyone, if you care to share that with us?
Oh, sure. I just got into somewhat of a heated discussion with my family because I had told them, you know what, I'm finally basically, I feel like I'm protesting my own right, and I decided to just kind of go with the Green Party regardless of, you know, if I just was tired of just going the same route and getting basically the same results. And what I tried to tell them, you know, like Silky Carmichael had said, you know, this country is racist from left to right, from top to bottom. And so I'm not quite understanding why, you know, and I understand that we all come to learn things at a different rate. So I'm, and I didn't always know this, but it was just like I definitely received a lot of backlash. I was even told, you know, I might as well have not even, I might as well just throw my vote in the trash, or I might as well just voted for Trump. And I'm like, it does not matter who we vote for. Our vote does not, it, as far as like the presidents, like Mr. Scotty Reed, he always says, you know, the presidents are selected. And I even said that. This is a selection as far as the presidential race. If we're really going to vote, you know, we need to focus on the down ballot. And that's actually what I started doing. But it's kind of hard, like, in Ohio, because I voted early. And, you know, I was definitely a part of, like, I'm not sure if you've heard of, but, you know, here we've only had one polling location per, like, district. I think that's what they said. So basically, let's say for, like for Cleveland, they only had one polling place. And then for Cincinnati, for Columbus, only one polling place. So, you know, you can only imagine the lines. But it didn't take too long for me. It was kind of moving along, I guess, pretty steady. But, you know, it's still, it was still, like, kind of difficult. You know, you can be on one side of town. You might have to drive almost an hour just to get to the polling place. But just, you know, back to the discussion with my family, they really were upset that I decided to go green. And, you know, in some areas, I mean, you only have really two green candidates on the ballot, which was, of course, Jill Stein, and we had, like, it was the prosecutor. So other than that, I mean, I had basically no other choice to either not vote for the candidate. In some slots, you only just had one person, so they're running unopposed. So I kind of felt like, okay, well, if I don't agree with this person, I don't feel like I should have to vote. So, yes, it was definitely not a pretty sight with me and my family.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, where do we get the disconnect from? And I just think back, I guess, we fought so hard to participate in this system, you know, our relatives before us, that it became almost a harbinger of things to come, because we have stayed stuck because we stay asking. So we stay in this mode of not begging. Well, yeah, I guess you would call it begging, because we continue to ask for things from a group of people that want to keep us suppressed. This country, like there is a clear defined thought pattern here, and people have different viewpoints about what this country is, and that doesn't change with this election, whoever the president may be. I mean, you know, I'm, like I said, I mean, I know it's early, you know, so maybe I'm just kind of like, you know, just eating the cheese of the whole, you know, political process, but I'm shocked that it's even this close, to be honest with you. I'm shocked that it's that many, you know, because to me, people that's voting for Trump are clear white supremacists. Like, there is no,
That's why this is the best election of my lifetime.
Yeah,
I have it documented now. I have paper. I have paperwork on every county.
I don't want to hear you talking about
right.
Well, what state? This state is blue. Right. No,
let's get to them districts.
We're talking about all these millions and millions of people that believe in making America great again.
America white again.
Make America great again. What are you talking about? Make America great in what way? Uh-oh. So Republicans do got control of the U.S. House. So, okay.
Yeah, they got the House.
Yeah, so this should let you know what's going to go down. So this is what I'm saying, like, and Jay, just understand, We don't want to come off like we're anti victims of racism that are choosing to exercise their right to vote because they feel tied to what our ancestors or what our relatives did that preceded us. You know, we don't want to, what's the word? Not acknowledge the fact that there were sacrifices made for us to even be in this position to even talk about it on this program. But we have to be able to start to diagnose ourselves and to be able to see white people differently, because they view us differently, no matter who you are. Like, there is a certain paradigm that they live in that we're not a part of. And these elections just magnetize it. This should just let you know what's going on in the mindsets of people. Like, you look at the state of Florida, you look at all these 4 million people for Donald Trump. I mean, you know, when people talk about, well, you know, nobody believe, like if this man didn't have, he's never been a politician before. He never talked about any kind of policy. He never even made any sense or any kind of logical sense about what he was going to do for anybody. And he got this many votes because he's basically thrown. Isn't this the same man said, let me grab him. I grab him by the so-and-so about 2 weeks ago. It still got this going. This is just and let you only, know what this should let you know what this country is about. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, not only that, I was actually, me and my family, we were talking about that, but he also said, you know, he would consider dating his daughter if it wasn't his daughter. So it's like he has said so many different things. The court case that he has out with the underage girl, it's like, this is a truly disgusting person. But I listen to, like, my elders a lot, and even here in Ohio, I will see, you know, the Trump Pence signs, and there would even be, actually, I saw a couple of times on different corners, there would be, like, middle-aged to older white men holding up, like, these Trump and Pence signs, like, vote for them. So it's like, feel like I'm definitely far from being disillusioned that, you know, all the racist people are in the South with two teeth and stuff like that. And then I also was reading the paper, and it was talking about how, like, all these different militia groups, it said that there were, like, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they found over 330 militia groups in all 50 states. So I feel like that was the most alarming information that I saw, because I'm like, these white supremacists, they have mobilized. You know, they have all these different, you know, militia groups that are training and doing all these different gun routines, and yet I'm not really seeing where black people or even non-white people even have anything, any type of mechanism to protect ourselves. And the last thing I wanted to say is that I was trying to explain to my mother just, you know, the difference between, you know, white supremacy and racism and white people in general, and she's like, you know, how can a poor white person be racist? But the reason why a poor white person can be racist is that, you know, if you have a group of I don't want to say poor, but because I'm not quite sure of their economic status, but, you know, those men who had took over that federal building somewhere in the West, and how they had actually, they had took it over with, you know, their guns drawn, and they had that big, long standoff. That's how you can tell that there's true white supremacy. They did not necessarily have, you know, all the money, but the police did not go ahead and gun them down, even though they took over a federal building.
Right, the Clyde and Bundy and his gang. The reason why, can you all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The reason why, I had seemed like the connection dropped. The reason why they did not go in aggressively to put those folks down, if that's the word you want to use, is because the super elites in this country, who are most assuredly classified as white, they know that their number one opposition in this country is the poor whites that you speak of, and the people that are in the militia, which is constitutional, by the way, to have a militia, a state militia. But they know that that's their number one enemy, so they don't want to do anything to try to upset that particular balance, because if they did go in there guns blazing, similar to like a Waco, in this day and age, it might trigger a different response than it did back in, what was that, like 96 Waco?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think that was before 96. I think of Branson Davidian. I think that's like 95. Well, 93? Yeah, it's close. Yeah, it was early 90s. Yeah. Go ahead.
And even going back to if you look at Ruby Ridge, I mean, it had a similar mm-hmm. type of thing where they went in there and shot up a whole bunch of folk. But now, you know, with the internet, things of that nature, information travels a lot more quickly. And so I don't think it was necessarily, I think it was a political strategy more so than it was, to a degree, it was based on skin color. But at the same time, I think it was based on political strategy because they know that that's their number one opposition, because a lot of these people classified as white, they have, like you said, most of them have the armaments, they have the weapons, they have the training and the assembly, they can assemble, and they know that that is going to be their main obstacle to whatever agenda they have. So go ahead.
And I would just say, I think that we can't get trapped on the economic stuff either. The poor stuff is irrelevant. I mean, it's relevant. Let me not say it's irrelevant. It's relevant, but it has a place. And, you know, you really would drop out the word poor whites and just focus on white people and how they divide themselves up. Some of it's by economics, but it seems like when you say poor whites, it may can cause some confusion. So I'm glad you're explaining it in a way to where it's not about economics in a sense. It's more about balance of power. You know, so naturally you're going to have whites that have more power than other whites. How do you balance some of that out? And I wonder, is things like militias and other rules they have in place helps them all get along to some degree? I wonder.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
And another thing is that the militia count, I think, is close to over 800, too.
Well, that's probably, I would double that.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. That's what the FBI reports, I think, around 800 and something.
How many of these men that you think that's white in militias. These militia groups, right, that don't classify themselves as militia groups that are part of police departments that are relatives to these guys? They go shooting on a regular basis. Let's go to the range. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. Now, let's just contrast that. How many black people do you see at an actual range? How many black people do you think they'll be comfortable with seeing there? Like, if it was just like 20 of us just to go to a range, hey, we're gonna go shooting here, you know. I mean,
I've actually seen it happen. A group of about 10 so-called black people in a gun range, and I'll tell you, the air was thick, man. I mean, it was a uncomfortable type feeling going on there, you know.
Right, because you are the enemy. You are the enemy without being the enemy. You are in hostile territory.
Well, you do have black gun groups. You do have black gun clubs. You do have blacks, especially in rural areas around the country, that go to gun ranges, have their own gun ranges, and shoot every day. But when we start talking about percentages, is where you see the disparity, I think.
No, I'm saying that if you are somewhere where you're going to a gun range, where there are, in your area, the most of the people that go to that gun range are classified as white.
Mm-hmm.
When you go up in there to shoot, they're going to look at you like you're crazy, because most of them, you're going to see a Southern, you're going to see a Confederate flag somewhere in there. See, that's not by mistake. That's not by happenstance. That's going to be this whole kind of Confederate flag or this kind of thing that's going to let you know, hey, man, you know, you can shoot here, you know, this is not we can't tell you that you can't come in here, but you're not going to feel very comfortable being up in here, so to speak. So I mean, it's just like you said, the air is thick. You feel this consternation, like you don't belong. And then, you know, you're thinking about it, you're shooting guns to kill people, right? These guns are used to shoot to kill. So you're shooting targets. You don't have an animal target up there. In fact, they think they think it's sacrilege to have an actual animal target. So you have a target for a dog up there. They'll look at you crazy. I was looking at the new show called Atlanta, and they went to the shooting range, and one of the characters on Atlanta, he put up a dog on the little thing to shoot, and. Those white supremacists there, they were like, hey, man, it's okay to shoot Negroes and shoot other kind of targets, human targets, but you just, what kind of human being are you to shoot a dog? Like that's the mentality. You know what I'm saying? Like we got to get to the point where, okay, when did life become so not valuable where people, and I'm not trying to like make a correlation to Black Lives Matter. I think that that has its place. That's something else. But I mean, I'm just talking about how people can just look at killing other human beings as something that is doable and not to feel any kind of, not guilt, but not to feel like, damn, I just took somebody's life. Like you feel justified because this person doesn't deserve living.
Right. Well, you see it on TV every day. I mean, it's almost to the point where
you know what's funny about the TV thing and the video game thing. What about before that? When that didn't exist, what was the excuse then?
It's a sport, like hunting, fish, game, wildlife.
No, I mean you notice how a lot of times people tend to say, you know, we see more. You know, video games, or we see more killing on TV. But if you back up just 50 years, which is nothing, that doesn't exist, right? Or maybe 70 years now when you add the Western, when you take the Westerns out. Yeah, it just seems like before television existed,
they was
mass murdering groups of people 2,000, right. 4,000 years prior to that. So what about those people? You know what I'm saying? It's just a funny thing.
Everything was done because
it's funny, blatant, that's all.
Not to say that it's not blatant now, but
what I mean is that not you, T. I'm just saying, like when you said that it always reminds me of when we see violence now. I just wonder sometimes, historically speaking, like what did you see then to where you could massacre entire groups of people? That's all.
Well, you gotta think too, like a lot of the video games and the stuff that people see and we see on TV. That is almost like a coping mechanism now, because think about when that stuff did not exist and people had this pent up anger, hate, animosity, and I would say it was even more real because they probably did a lot more hunting, first of all, because they had to, if you go back a couple hundred centuries, they had to feed their families, so killing animals and things of that nature was nothing. That's a way of life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you are looking at someone who does not look like you, and you've been, you know, programmed and preconditioned your whole life to look down on these people and think of less than human, then that's nothing
to kill. So that's just another
animal.
So I got you, but you're saying you're thinking that the conditioning historically comes from real killing, being exposed to real killing, be it people or animals, versus video game. I got you. Makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Killing animals. Go ahead, Jay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Also, I was going to add, you know, with all the different wars, because I know I heard it like maybe like in Hidden Colors, and then like some other things that I've seen where they're talking about like the Crusades, which was supposed to be one of the bloodiest battles, and that was killing off so many different people. So it's like I definitely agree. It's like, you know, we can't just all blame it on these video games because people have been killing huge numbers of other people, sometimes people that look like them, for centuries.
Yeah, and I would even take that a step further and say that it's probably a good thing we do have these violent movies and violent video games, because it's almost like an out for these people.
All right, we're getting ready to go to break. This is the Code Breakers, and T, you can jump back in when we come back from the break.
You are listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network, new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. We're going into our second hour. This is going to be a three-hour program, mostly discussing the election tonight between Trump and Hillary for the presidential election. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of other local, state county elections going on as well across the United States of America. You can reach us at code_breakers1865 on Instagram. You can also email us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at codebreakers191. Go ahead, T. You can finish your comment.
Yes, I mean, I think going back to what we were talking about, I think in a way, and this may sound ironic and crazy, but I think in a way it's probably a good thing that we have a lot of these violent video games and movies as a way to for people to vicariously live through these individuals and essentially stress relief, because it's a very stressful environment that we live in, whether it's politically, financially, physically, you know. So I think it's a stress relief and a way for people to release without releasing in a way that's going to actually harm other individuals. So whether or not that actually leads into mass shootings and other things, like the guy who was posting on Amazon about items that he was using to torture a lady he had locked up in his on his 95-acre property. That I can't answer, but that's my take on it. And I don't know if you guys wanted to get into the global elections and the UN for the second hour, or do you guys want to continue on track?
Yeah, we can keep going.
You can jump in if you wanted to kind of like go in on some of the global elections. I think that has some importance for sure.
Well, look at the Brexit, vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that. I mean, you're looking at a rise of popularism and people essentially wanting to stay within their own borders.
That was more about, and I don't mean to interrupt, but wasn't that more about the anti-immigration? They wanted to kind of keep immigration down to a minimum.
Yeah, I mean, one of the stated agendas was actually to do away with borders and to have an amalgamation of a society where the social and political and cultural lines of people are so crossed up that it becomes easier to control people. Because although people have nationalism and they have isolationist ideas, those can get in the way of that type of agenda. So by mixing the races, regardless how you feel about it, I think eventually, if you do it enough, it could start to do away with certain customs and traditions. Like even if you, for example, right, I went to a wedding between the bride was Ethiopian and the groom was African American, quote unquote. And just to see as a striking contrast between the two cultures, I mean they kind of did their best to appease both families. But like, for example, like when you went up to
interesting
to the reception to eat, right, they had a section, you could literally see the separation between the two sections of food choices. You had one side that was American, you know, you had your hors d'oeuvres and your I guess your pastas, you know, you had your meats like your roast beef and your chicken, you know, your baked chicken, things of that nature, you know, green beans. Then on the other side you had injera. You know, people familiar with injera is the bread that Ethiopians use to eat, okay? And typically they'll pick up their food with the injera and they'll eat it together. Mm-hmm. So, and they eat a lot of meat. But one thing that really stood out was they had a raw cow leg. I guess they probably slaughtered the animal that morning and had the leg there. I guess they already had drained the blood out of it. And the families from the Ethiopian side were literally eating the flesh of the raw cow leg. And to look at the faces of the African American people and some of the comments that were being made,
I mean, that to me was
right in the open.
You know, just sad. Yeah. I mean, it was right in the open, and just the conversations that I heard and the looks that I saw were very off-putting. You know, so you think about that, and you think about other people mixing together from other different cultures, and that's just a small picture of what that would look like. So there's a lot of things to consider in that regard. So I said to say that I think that's why you see a rise in isolationism and nationalist ideology, and that's reflected here in the States too with Trump, which he pretty much represents that same ideology.
Well, if I could comment on the Brexit, because I was following like some of the major news outlets about the Brexit, and one of the things that kind of struck me, I feel like one of the similarities that I saw, at least between, you know, the people who voted to exit the EU, mm-hmm. Yeah, was that it kind of seemed like it was almost the European type of Trump supporters, where like what you were talking about was that they were real nationalists, and they wanted to keep the different immigrants out, whether it's from Serbia or wherever. But then also I heard that some of the people said, well, they didn't think their vote really counted, and it kind of makes me feel like, I know that the system of racism, white supremacy is a global system, but then it also kind of threw me back that, you know, if the people actually voted to exit the EU, or is it something to where what we're dealing with now, which is, you know, this basically this election?
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Yes. A lot of the Brexit had to do with the fact that these people's economy, like Greece, for example, their economy was being, you know, because Greece has a small GDP, and then if you look at what they don't export a lot.
Now they're more tourists. They're more tourist based.
Exactly. So their economy was being highly affected by using the euro, okay, because mm-hmm. they didn't have their own national currency that they could control. Like recently, who was it? Recently, Egypt actually made their currency free floating, because they're dealing with a lot of debt and they're trying to find a way out of it. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot of companies, a lot of countries trying to go back within their borders and handle their own issues rather than have, you know, someone like the European Union control their economy and, you know, impose austerity on them. So, you know, because, you know, you got to, at the end of the day, it's not, even though they try to put it off on the people as being financially irresponsible, you know, a lot of it has to do with how fiscal policy was managed and how people were greedy and mismanaged the money, and so they'll put it off on the backs of the people. And same thing is happening here with, you know, they claim they're going to bring jobs back. I don't see that happening. And what's interesting too, when you look at the fact that people are asking for a higher minimum wage, that's a catch-22. While I agree that people should be paid, you know, commensurate with their job and a sustainable living wage, you got to also look at it and say, well, the more more people ask for more money, the more that company, you know, if I'm a company, I'm looking at my books and I say, well, we're spending, you know, if I'm a, you know, say I'm a large corporation, I'm spending, you know, a couple million on salary, you know, to pay people to do work that I could outsource to India and do it for less than half the cost. So it's a catch-22, and so it's going to be interesting to see what happens as the push to, you know, continually raise the minimum wage continues to go on. And people might look at it as a great idea, and I think it is, but it also has some negative. It's going to have some negative impact as well.
And then also, I know that I've heard that not so many companies are now insourcing, like, you know, to the prisons, so not always like going out to, like China or India or whatever, now that they're actually coming back. And I know like the documentary, the 13th, they talked about that. And then also I know like you know, on New Abolitionist Radio. They talk about that a lot too, and I feel like with Trump's lies and also Hillary's lies, you know, if nobody's talking about ending mass incarceration, or at least ending, you know, or maybe even promoting the Justice Is Not for Sale Act, then I feel like, you know, like you said, nobody, we're not going to get the higher wages or more jobs.
Well, that's not how capitalism works. Capitalism work to get the most out of labor and the least cost. So, you know, the profit that prisons give, you know, white people, and, you know, especially in this country, that particular, trying to end that is just, that's just like trying to go up against the NRA and the gun lobby, like trying to end guns in this country. I mean, good luck with that. I mean, you will have a civil war if you go in and actually go in on the NRA or the prison group. And I know that we do have movements that are doing a great job at you know, doing a diligent fight. It needs participation, don't get me wrong, but it's almost like a catch-22, because it's so many people that are connected, whether you're prisoners or whether you are working for the prison system. And this goes down to immigrants that come over and be nurses in prisons. This goes down to people that are from the same neighborhoods. I'm just talking about the area that we know of here, where people work in the prisons that we know of. They're from the cities, so they know the prisoners. And then they, you know, there are immigrants that are classified as black that work in these prisons also. So it's like a double whammy, man. And then when you go to the rural areas like Cumberland and where's the other prison out way out in Allegheny County, Maryland, yeah, where the mountains at?
Jessup too.
But Jessup is the city. You know, I would consider that kind of like close, you know, to our area, where there are a lot of people that we know of that may work at these jails or prisons or whatever.
D, can I provide you with some updated information that you may not be aware of? Private prisons almost without a business this year. That's the kind of movement and the noise and the counter to the system, its effectiveness. They almost without a business because they lost over half of their stock. Because of the pressure that people have been
putting. The Fed pulled out, right?
Say that again, sir.
I said the federal government pulled out.
Yeah, when they announced that. But the federal government didn't just up and decide one day, hey, we're going to stop using private prisons and all that. No, that's a result of people countering that part of the system. So they almost went out of business this year. Lots of people lost a lot of money, I'm an abolitionist. I don't underestimate these crackers, these racists, and what slavery ultimately means. It's a main pillar of the economy or capitalism. I think Thomas Jefferson called his enslaved Africans capital. He really did say this in a letter, that he referred to them as capital. So I'm under no illusion, and my comrades are under no illusion of what we're up against. But if we don't do it, who will?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, to piggyback off of what Scotty said, right? You take the Corrections Corporation of America, right, which is one of the biggest corporations that's involved in private prisons. And they're actually listed as a publicly traded company on the stock exchange. I think it's on the New York Stock Exchange, if I'm not mistaken. If you look at this stock, which was trading around toward the beginning of this year, roughly around $35, and it's dropped off sharply around, say, the end of August to under $20, and then now, right? If you look at the last few days, it's trading around $14. So that is a testament to Mr. Scotty's talking about there.
I think that my point of view is just coming from the whole drive as far as like where we continue to go on as far as trying to continue to use that as a drive to create loopholes in the system. Don't get me wrong. Everything that can be done needs to be done. It's very, 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 very important work. The drive to have free labor and for it to be people that are basically locked up and used for capital, like you said, Mr. Reed, is what I'm saying. Like their drive to continue to find avenues to use black bodies as free labor in this country is an integral part to America. Like without prisons and without this type of labor that they had to continue when they basically created the 13th Amendment to so-called eradicate, you know, chattel slavery, and move it from the plantation to the prison complex, it's just another realm of refinement. Now, as far as I know, I don't know I don't know of any major release of prison. I'll just say this, and you know, kind of leave it out there, and please correct me. I don't know of any major release of prisoners due to, you know, them losing stock. I do know people get moved around a lot, prisoners to different prisons. I do know that that does happen, that they do get moved to a different plantation away from their families. But yeah, I'm just talking about the dynamics of the reason why they continue to use black bodies as free labor.
They just burnt down a prison here in North Carolina about a couple of weeks ago. I call it it's a historic rebellion against slavery right now. It's just not being reported on, where individuals who are, I think I hear a lot of people use the term more confined on the plantation than the rest of us, or greater confinement. I call it slavery. And many of these people are recognizing that it's slavery, and they're saying we're not working no more. You're not going to exploit our labor like that no more. We're going on hunger strike. We're just not going to show up to work. And here in North Carolina, they burnt down the prison, and they had obviously had to transfer those prisoners to other places. So I get what you're saying. But this is a war, and there has to be opposition, or you're just going to be a slave. Now, who wants to be a slave? I don't want to be a slave. And it's a lot of other people that don't want to be a slave. And so I say VGQ to anybody's effort to counter any part of the system. But we are seeing historic movement right now in that particular area. So I just want, I'm like, we do have to have a realistic view of the system, but we can't be afraid to take it on. And we do have to recognize when certain areas or certain tactics are working, and then get more people to participate using those same tactics. So you got an unprecedented number of prisoners across this country right now who are in a what's being called prison strike. Just look up the social hashtag prison strike or prison strikes. It's going, this is the eighth week now.
Yeah, I agree with that, but you know, dude, All I'm saying is that the drive to use black bodies is what drives these people. Like that needs to be said, and I agree that resistance is what is needed. I'm not against that. So if it sound like
should it be resistance is futile?
No, I mean,
is this a linear discussion? Or this is a circular discussion.
Well, I was just responding to what Jay said earlier about the whole deal as far as like what they was using prisons for, things of that nature. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, you was making a point about that, about how, you know, the whole, how the system work, and I was just kind of like piggybacking on that a little bit. I wasn't saying it as a sense of, you know, there shouldn't be any resistance. I am not saying that, and you know, that is not my point of view. I don't believe in it. I think that their victims can choose their own way, will logically make sense for them, no judgments. I am just of the purview where I look at it from a...
Well, answer this. Can you answer this question for me, DC?
Yeah.
We are in a system of racism, white supremacy?
Yeah, I take that position. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And when someone uses the word supreme, it only can be one supreme, right?
That's the logic.
All right. So when this empire was designed and developed over the last 500 or 600 years, has it gotten bigger or smaller?
Incredibly bigger. More violent.
Do they have less power or more power?
More power. But it demands participation, though. It demands.
Do they have more control or less control?
More control.
Okay. I was looking at the United Nations and the League of Nations, and looking at that World War II time frame, mm-hmm. and just looking at how they developed the United Nations as far as them building out member states, coming together, Russia, China, France, Britain, and America. I think those are like the permanent members or whatever. And just how they were able to start to manage the entire planet as a collective group. And even, like you were saying about the refinement part, even decolonizing places around the planet and having a system set up to continue to manage and maintain those places, even developing democracies, of course, under their control.
Right.
You know, I find that just from a voting perspective, I find that interesting to show the level of power that group has to be able to manage a planet. Right, not like an area, but the entire planet, and being able to figure out how to manipulate over almost 7 billion people. Like the scale of it is my whole point. So you know, you can get into small discussions about different things, but when you start going on the scale level, it puts things in, I think, a better perspective, regardless of what's going on, right? So we can have different, you can have different events taking place, but when right. you're understanding the global system of racism and white supremacy, it gives you a perspective of how much power is really out there, right? So when you can structure entire continents, you know what I'm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you can release people from what you call, you have some name for it, you release them, you come up with a new name and have them doing other things. You know, and then once you get into the mindset, once you get into someone's mind and you start to control their mind, they can think they can do all type of things. But when you look at the word supreme or supremacy, that's really the key word. And then can you assert that power? And can anyone else attempt that? And what happens? Or what has happened historically? And what will happen going forward? When you're able to manage, you know, you think about, I always think about Mr. Fuller, where he talks about the slave ship, you're in the bottom of the slave ship, and everybody got chains on, and your chains, you and they're arguing about whose chain is the shiniest chains, who has the shiniest cuffs on, not understanding when you're in a system of racism and white supremacy, accepting that reality and understanding the level of power, sheer power, that is.
Did he really right? say that?
Yeah.
He really said that victims of racism, specifically slavery, were in the slave hold comparing chains. Did he really say
that? No. He would use that as an example.
I mean, because that makes them sound like a bunch of dumb animals that don't understand that they enslaved. And I think every person that was a victim of slavery understood when them chains was put on them what was happening to them. But to your question and to your point, your very valid point about power and being able to project that power, I would say in today's environment, the way people's minds are been programmed, is that it don't take very much power when there's little resistance. If your attitude is resistance is futile, that means I can't beat them, So I might as well join them, and then that's when we get into how the system perpetuates itself. I think DC hit upon it. It requires participation. They're like Dr. Welsing said, that how does 5% of the world's population, they're in control of 95% of non-white people on the planet.
Right.
How do they do that?
One-tenth of the planet.
Yeah. How do they do that? If you think about it logically and mathematically, they cannot do that.
What it's called.
Well, yeah, that and participation.
A whole lot of killing.
A participation from the victims. Because a lot of non-white people have served in the United States military and killed a whole lot of other non-white people for the empire of white supremacy. So it requires participation.
So, but why do we decide to participate on a wide level? Like, when we get into these discussions, and I think this is very, very important, because this gets down to the breakdown of what it means to be black, what people's definition of that word means, and how should we hold each other accountable when we think of each other as a group that is moving forward. Now, we got people that participate. Would you agree that we got people that so-called participate in the system of racism, work at prisons, work at police departments, be in the military, you know, getting benefits, doing harm to other non-white victims of racism, but they still believe that the white person is practicing racism, there's racism on their job, there's racism doing this, there's race. What I'm saying is the participation part of it, when you think about, and see, this goes into a little deeper discussion, and I know this kind of veering off, but it's all part of the same thing. Voting is a very participation process. T alluded to it earlier. This is almost like an examination, if you will. Like every 4 years, they do a pulse of the American psyche. What they got it already lined up. They got the technology to get the polls lined up to what patterns of behavior are going into place, to what they need to do to kind of codify their behavior to make us do certain things. So when we live in an environment where minds are basically being pushed and prodded, and people are thinking that they're participating in something that is called the political process and that is benefiting them, when really it's killing them and keeping them trapped, or keeping people that they're related to trapped, how do we actually free ourselves of this system without infighting with each other when we're trying to talk about solutions? Because this is what ends up happening, and I see it all the time. You get some people that are constructively trying to deal with racism, right? But then somebody will point at someone else and say, well, you don't think of it the way I do, right? But we can't peacefully be able to coexist because we're powerless. And I think what Mr. Fuller was saying when he, and I don't know if he actually said the chain part, but when he talked
he wasn't talking about actual slaves. He was using it as an example of today's time.
The point still holds up when you talk about victims blaming each other and we're both at the bottom of the slave ship, because right. No one has solved this problem as of yet. And if we are to solve this problem, we're going to need coalition. Nobody can do it by themselves. You can codify your behavior individually. Part of this program is for victims of racism to codify their behavior. Do the best that you can or what you feel comfortable with. But also, to reiterate mass movement points, if all the men that are locked up in prison decide to stop working, then the prison system collapses. That is a valid point. That is the truth. But there is something to the way the system has basically crafted itself, the psychology. People get up to go to work in the morning. If people stop going to work in the morning, then the economy fails. If nobody votes, this doesn't happen. You don't have CNN. People turn off the TV. If everybody does that, then it ends. If we stop eating McDonald's in black communities, we can end McDonald's. But what keeps us from doing these same patterns of behavior? We have people saying things, but it ends up breaking apart because we are intricately layered into this whole thing. We consider ourselves American. We consider ourselves part of this political process. It's almost like you're fighting against yourself, and then after a while, you're gonna allow some things to go, and you're not gonna allow some things to go. But then you're gonna have victims arguing about what they allow and what they don't allow. I hope I'm kind of making my point without causing more confusion. If you get what I'm trying to say.
No, makes sense. It makes sense to me. I would just add one piece, and I'll let you go with T. I'll just say that when the system does, in my opinion, or when it starts to fracture, it'll take care of itself. Because when we're talking about when it's going to be mass extermination and mass killing, it's going to be at an all-time level. And so that could be something that maybe people are thinking about, maybe even subconsciously, that if we did disrupt anything in this environment, how much loss of life is going to be required? Now, I'm thinking 1 or 2 billion people will have to die for this system to come to an end. But anyway, and I think it's going to take some time. But obviously, we know it will end. That is a definite. So I feel like it will end on the weight of itself. It will fracture. It will fall apart, and it will destroy itself. And it will be a tremendous amount of, unfortunately, a tremendous amount of death that comes behind it. But go ahead, T.
Capitalism is a zero sum game. Before you go,
capitalism
is a zero sum game.
Yeah, that is an absolute, oof, boy, for sure.
Well, it needs ever ending markets and profits to pursue,
yeah.
And once the market becomes saturated, yeah, then your earnings start to become they start to dwindle, and so you have to look for search out new ways to ever increasingly improve profits and push up shareholder confidence. But this whole election, I've seen this before. This is this is vote or die. Part 2.
Thanks a lot.
Look at this. This is vote or die part 2. All right, we've seen this before. And this goes back to what DC is alluding to, because you say, well, why, you know, I'm not saying you in particular, but why do we keep participating in this system? Because I keep saying this, and I'm gonna keep hammering that participation is key in any system. And so, what they can simply do is they can scare people up and say, okay, well, just like they did, what was that, 2004, the Vote or Die campaign?
Mm-hmm.
What was it? They registered all these people to vote because, what was it, Bush and Kerry? Or was it?
Yeah.
I believe Bush and Kerry.
Yeah.
All right, so they scared people up because, oh, we don't, you know, we don't want Bush in office.
They had Diddy out.
Diddy was out.
Talking about rock the vote.
Right.
Now they got
right.
Jay-Z out.
They're Jay-Z. So, you know, it becomes the thing where people become scared. They say, oh, well, you know, especially people classified as non-white become scared. They say, oh, well, what, you know, I don't want to see Trump in office. You know, I can't imagine what that would look like. And here it is that nothing has changed. I mean,
you've been living it.
I mean, to be scared into thinking that you got to vote for one of the two, same faces on the same coin, right?
Yep.
One of the same two sides of the coin. And you scare people into that to think that things are going to get better. That's what spurns the participation. When they do stuff like they supposedly reopen an investigation into Hillary Clinton, that spurns participation, right, for Trump. When they go on to the diatribes about how Trump is a womanizer, that spurns participation for women. So it is cleverly crafted, okay, to drive people and bring souls to the poll. Okay, that's what it does. That's what it does.
Souls to the polls, huh?
I mean, it almost forces you, because you start to feel bad. You start to feel moralistic, and you're like, man, you know what?
Well, do you
think about my children?
Do you think we agreed to participate?
To a degree, you have to.
Like how did that happen though?
Because the nature of any being is to resist change or to resist anything that is oppressing it. That is the nature of any being, whether it be a cat, a dog, a fish. If you take that fish out of the water, it's going to resist. So if you hold that cat down, it's going to resist. So you have to provide it with comforts to make it think that it's not being put in that subjugated position.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So you say if you can enslave someone for, say, 1,500 years, like the Arabs, I think, did to the East Africans, if I'm not mistaken about that time frame, how do you bond it? I know it's a different type of slavery, but how do you convince people to maybe sell their family or do different things for such a long period of time? Or even the ones that were here where you're able to convince someone for 500 years, 500 years, you know, you had lots of uprisings to be able to manage that. Is it from just giving comforts?
Giving creature comforts. Creature comforts. People don't want to give up. It's almost like.
But what happens to the mind? What happens to the mind, and do you transfer that, you know, to your offspring?
It depends on. Because I mean, everyone comes to the planet with a different agenda and a different purpose. So, and that could depend because, you know, if you look at families, if you take Jay, for instance, who called in, she's like completely opposite from her family, right?
Yeah.
So
you never know
which way it could go, you know?
Yeah.
And but a lot of times, it's not saying anyone in particular, but it's the people that come out as warriors or classified as warriors because they go against the status quo. Those are the people that end up becoming casualties of the system.
It's lonely. It's lonely. You're ostracized. It started with me when I decided to not even go to church anymore. You know, when I decided to kind of veer away from the setup thinking and start thinking differently about. I mean, we celebrate Thanksgiving for Christ's sakes. I'm saying for Christ's sake, we celebrate Thanksgiving, man. Like, people will shame you into celebrating that.
Celebrate Thanksgiving. We celebrate money. We celebrate making money.
But when you think about that whole, when you think about everything that we're talking about.
Think about that.
The conflict. I'm saying the conflict that we have is just something that's going to happen when you're dealing with a group that has been basically put in the position that we've been put in, where we've been forced to participate in our own oppression.
Yeah, that's a damning thing, man.
When you're forced to participate in your own oppression just to survive.
So what you're saying is that we shouldn't even be laughing.
Nothing should be funny ever. Yeah, we laugh and joke with each other, but I mean, when you talk about another victim, when you talk about another victim because they don't got Jordans on, they don't got Jordans on that are made in sweatshops overseas.
You understand what I'm saying?
By slave labor that is done overseas. But then
the clothes on your back,
and we talk about each other. I'm saying this is just the pattern of behavior that we do. Oh man, you don't got this. It's just we're victims of racism. Man.
You're talking about programming. You're talking about programmed behavior that has been programmed through various forms of media or mediums. Whether it's the school textbooks, it's written by racist white supremacists to give you a white supremacist worldview. So victims grow up with a white supremacist worldview, believing that there's nothing they can do to these people are just so great and what have you. So, but again, the media, like y'all said, no laughing, but millions of people laugh at the jokes of Steve Harvey, Tom Joyner, as Mr. Fuller would say, showcase people, especially in entertainment, to have us laughing and joking when there's nothing to be laughing and joking about, like you all have rightly pointed out.
It's devastating because we're trying to kind of free our minds, because, you know, free your mind and the rest will follow. I mean, really, it's the truth. But that's one of the hardest things to do, because people don't see an actual legitimate benefit outside of what they can actually prove. So you know, they'll look at you as just talking. So it's hard to get people to participate in economics with each other, even though to me that's still something that's a little shaky, because you got to take advantage of folks. But it's still something that could be used to take care of yourself while the system is still going. We just don't have a way of contexting everything. We don't have a way of describing things of what we're trying to do. So things become jaded. People become jaded with each other, especially victims of racism and white supremacy.
It's like the program responses. I mean, you know, as what you alluded to, D, when you said that people become a social pariah amongst your family, amongst your peers. The original social circles that you used to run in, they're no longer applicable. You know, you can't talk the way you used to talk. You have to start to guard your words, and it becomes uncomfortable. And people don't want to give up those social associations that they've worked so long to build and foster. You know, that's difficult. You know, that's very difficult. Because where do you go? Once you become this so-called awakened person, and you start to see things from an entirely different perspective, where does one go in order to have a camaraderie with others? Because
I will say, you're going to have a hard life.
The path of wisdom is a lonely one. That's what I've been told.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a hard one because you... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jay. Please, Chair.
I just wanted to add, I definitely was thinking about that today, you know, and just me trying to enlighten myself, you know, because like what Mr. Scotty Reed was saying, you know, it's definitely the programming, and we do have a lot of programming within our schools, not learning about who we are, where we came from, or even what similar people throughout the diaspora, how they are doing in life. We're only taught, you know, history from one point of view. So I know I kind of got angry, because it's like, I feel like, you know, it's really having to play catch up and definitely feeling lonely, you know, trying to spread this information amongst, you know, other people and making sure, like, you know, like what Dr. Francis Cresswelding said, you know, it's not about hating anybody, because of course you don't want to waste your time hating. We don't have time for that. But you also need to counter this, you know, this racist system with knowledge. And I feel like it's people, like you said, they're too set on their creature comforts, and they're too set on either that or just trying to find some little mini escape, whether that's, you know, the Jordans, the shopping, the drugs, what have you. But I mean, that's not going to change anything. Especially, you know, you have some people who have children who still aren't trying to even think about changing the system for their children. So I feel like it's definitely we have to take back our minds, but we at least have to first take that step to know that our minds are not our own, and we have to fight that. And I feel like I'm even, you know, having to fight that continuously.
The code that they have programmed into us has been generational. So it's really like going into the Matrix, like, you know, we on the Nebuchadnezzar and we going down, and we like, man, you know, once I tell you this information, I don't know, you know, I'm hesitant to even talk to people, because I just want to get them where they're at, because I don't want to go too far in, because after a while, I mean, T can attribute to this. We have talked to people before, and we kind of gauging. We looking at each other like, man, you know, do you think we should even, you know, we're looking at it like, you know, how far do we go in? Like, do we just kind of like, you know, me and Paradise, we do this all the time, you know, Jay. So it's funny, because you're going to be drawn to people that are like you, but you're going to figure out that your stories are going to be the same. You're going to find out that you're going to be ostracized. You're going to be identified by other groups of people pretty early. Oh, yeah, that's this person here. I mean, it's almost like you're walking around with a with a different type of energy around you. So it takes care of itself. It's already, you're already identified. Like, people already see it on you.
And I think you got to have, you have to start.
That's a great point.
I would say you have to definitely start preparing yourself. I always look at it, you got to have an arsenal of information as well to be able to kind of pepper people with it. Really trying to expose whiteness when you can. Because a lot of black people don't really, they're not really aware of what's happening. But there are moments where they make comments and they become aware, or it's a flash of like, oh man, they actually do know that, that they black. And that they're in some kind of system, and it is, you do get some chances. I think, I mean, we talk to a lot of people, but you do get some chances to kind of expose whiteness. And I think that sometimes, even though it may upset the person, I was just dealing with someone today who, as I was giving them more information, they was physically getting upset. They was physically they was tearing up and everything, because they're like, it was starting, a few things was clicking.
Right.
When you really hammer them, I mean on basic white things, you know, TV shows, just basic things that you're not really thinking about. Like, you know, you're not a white person, right? You know, you're not running this. Like, you do know that you're being exploited or used, and so it's a challenge though. It's a lifelong challenge, I think, as well.
What they think about whiteness? Go ahead.
DC, can you expound upon that, man? Because that's very interesting. You know, how when you walk around, people can look at you and they can sense that you're different. They can sense that this ain't the average Negro.
He's talking about that movie Divergent. You're talking about The Matrix applies, but Divergent as well.
Yeah.
Where the system don't hold for you. And I knew like at a young age that it happened for me very early, that I could see myself kind of like, you know, even when I'm sitting in church and I'm feeling the programming, I'm feeling the pull, I'm feeling that something is incorrect about it.
Especially at church.
And what ended up happening was, you know, I still went along with it because, you know, my mother and, you know, my aunts and everything, you know, this is about being a good Christian. But then, you know, the logic just didn't hold. I said, well, if we're talking about the beginning of human history, why were their name Adam, and why are these people white? Like, that just it never computed. Like, it never went into my brain as sticking. You know, everybody has the grandmother with the big Bible in the middle of the
white with that Cesar Borgia.
Oh man, with the pictures in it. You know, the heavens and all this, and I'm like,
the white angels and all that.
And then you go look at the map. You know how you look at the map at the beginning, like, hold on.
It don't make sense.
Something ain't right. Now, I know these people here are not white that stay in this. This ain't in Europe. This is not in England.
Didn't exist.
And we're talking about
colonial history.
We're talking about even before all this colonialization took place, where basically these people are darker in these areas now, but before the mixing even took place. And you're telling me these people on the Mediterranean, the Red Sea and all this look like white folks? Come on, man.
It's crazy.
Why is that even happening, and why are we allowing it to seep into our brains this way? But the programming, like Mr. Reed has said, is generational. So
the light in that tunnel, though, is definitely, especially for my family, as far as uprisings, definitely through slavery, which shows you that that the system doesn't take everybody.
It doesn't.
People are willing to die.
But the system
to expose the system.
The system can handle fallouts, and it's back to what Jay says. It makes you feel lonely. People need their family. People need people that's close to them.
Feel
ostracized, you know. Not to go to Thanksgiving dinner to get some of that sweet potato pie. I love sweet potato pie. Let me just keep it real funky with you. My aunt did.
College too, bro.
Hold on. You gonna have to come to Thanksgiving. Not trying to be funny. You know, my aunt tell me, you gonna have to come to Thanksgiving. You gotta come to my house. You understand? Period. Yeah. If you want, I don't care about you feeling whatever kind of way. You mm-hmm. need to get over that. That black stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Told me. Straight up.
Yeah.
And I mean, just for me to even get some, I'm like, for real?
What's your response like, to that?
Hey, man, you know, it, like I said, what I'm trying to say is it's a very real deal. You know, I still respect it because this is my great aunt. So this is my grandmother's sister, you know, and you know, my grandmother then passed away. So she's like kind of like took over the matriarch role. You know, she's the mother of everybody now. So everybody looks to her, and she, man, does a wonderful. She know I love sweet potato pie, sweet potato casserole, all that. But oh man, the best.
That's but, your buying. You
know, but I told her, you know, I don't celebrate it, you know, this and that other. But I know people, they make provisions, and that's what I'm saying. It's the programming point, but we have to stand on principle. When is enough enough? When are we going to be able? When do we do? That's the most that I can do. I don't have to participate in that. You know what I'm saying? I love the people that are classified as my family. I was raised around. I love them, but I do understand that there are some things that they practice that I don't participate with or I feel uncomfortable with doing. You know what I mean? Even when it comes down to the Christian Jesus, when we still do the same things. So that they have, it has ostracized me to a point. You know, they know how I feel.
You can die in peace though.
Code Breakers, I have a network announcement that I have to give because of the problems that we've been having with the conference line, problems we've been having with Skype, is that this conference will shut down. It possibly will shut down at the top of the hour, but we are still going to continue with another hour of Code Breakers, and everyone will just have to dial back in. But this will be the last problem of Black Talk Media Project because of our how shall I say this, generous donors is going to allow us to invest in another system to where it's just one telephone number. We'll also have a toll-free number, and we'll also have chat. I'm actually hooking that up right now, so excuse these problems that we've been having with the phone systems. We are going to invest in a phone system for this station, and we won't have these problems in the future, hopefully.
Right on.
All right. All
right. Right on. Thanks for that announcement. Much needed. Uh-huh. Much needed. But no, Jay, were you about to say anything, Jay? I didn't know if I heard you or not.
Well, that was me asking you about as far as the dying in peace, because, you know, a lot of people are leaving this earth in confusion, unfortunately. Not to get too preachy or too religious, but it's interesting that within this system, you know, you follow certain religious principles, and then you're supposed to be able to pass on and go to these different places. So it's interesting as you get clarity on the reality of the situation that now you will maybe have peace because you do have the clarity, as difficult as it would be as you trek the earth with the knowledge that's been given to you, because I think a select few people, you know, good or bad, you know, has been touched and been able to get access to information, and you kind of have to deal with it. You know what I'm saying? You kind of got to deal with it. You kind of got to talk to people about it, and hopefully it'll grow. Hopefully it'll grow.
Yeah, like minds will be gravitated to. You know, you'll be in a minority clearly, but you know we're in so-called I guess you know the DMB area, and I know a lot of people feel like there's so many enlightened black people here, but no, we have the same situations that you guys have. Yeah.
And I will.
Else. It's and not I will like say, any kind of special, you know, what I'm saying, special potion here that enlightened black folks, you know.
But the thing is that I don't consider myself enlightened, but I understand what you're saying. But
you know, as how far some people be like, you know, move to DC or move to Atlanta,
yeah,
or you
want
to know some enlightened, you know. Whatever that means, but you know, I have heard that said before. Oh, yeah. I thought y'all would be different. I don't understand that.
I'm not enlightened or conscious. I'm a victim of racism.
I am a victim of racism. Wow.
But anyway, but you make a good point in the past about how when you look at the system of racism, how when you think about the Roman Empire or the Greek Empire or other empires previously, looking at where they were situated and how much reach that they had relative to what's going on now, and just contrasting those two things just to get some understanding of just the level of technology advancement, being able to control the global waterways, etc. I just thought that was interesting that you brought up in the past, just to kind of, you know, to show the growth of it, I'll put it that way.
Right.
Because, you know, the Roman Empire is supposed to be one of the greatest empires, or Kemet was the center of the universe, basically, and so much came out of there. But just the advancement of those systems, it's just interesting. It's interesting, I would say.
T, you had anything you wanted to add?
I did wanted to, this might be kind of going back into something we touched on earlier during this hour. I know we're getting to the top of the next hour, final hour, but I did notice that the, if I can share this, the Corrections Corporation of America, they actually rebranded themselves as Core Civics, and basically that was an attempt to portray themselves in a better light to the public. And what they plan to do is to enter into a growing network of residential reentry centers to help tackle America's recidivism crisis, as well as cost-saving government real estate solutions and something they call a core civic community. And I guess this is a statement from either their
CEO or shareholder or top investor.
CEO or their board, and they said rebranding as Core Civic is the culmination of a multi-year strategy.
Yeah, it's just typical corporate gibberish. I mean, that's what they all do.
Exactly.
Rebrand. They do different things. Yeah. Same old.
Yeah. But they said to transform our business from largely corrections and detention services to a wider range of government solutions, and that is from the CEO. And so you can see that they're divesting themselves of this particular strategy that they first launched. And in fact, I think you see that across the board, because October, which we just ended, was one of the highest, I think, ever months for acquisitions and mergers. So mm-hmm. I think our corporations are consolidating their power. Maybe they know something we don't, but... That just strikes me. Strikes me.
But that's what makes the Matrix analogy so pertinent, because you just change it, you just do something different, you keep it moving.
Right. And how many people do you think are reading these press releases?
Not many.
Yep.
I'm glad you brought that out. That's a good point, for sure.
Very good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good point.
Hey, since we've reached the top of the hour, we're going to go take another short station identification break again. I could be wrong. The conference line may hang up on us. If it does, please, everyone, call right back in. I will dial in. Listeners, don't y'all go nowhere. I'll play some music till we get the third hour of the Code Breakers, this special broadcast on election 2016. So I don't know if they picked the next CEO yet or selected them yet, so I'll check on that. But if that does happen, just call back in, and we'll go into this break and hopefully rejoin on the other side. You're listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network.
Oh, racial dislocation. Keep them moving. People who are forever on the move through eminent domain, urbanization, urban renewal, gentrification, are here again, drying up the river. You build a dam 800 miles up, and the river seals off the water behind the dam. I mean, the dam is sealed off, the river is sealed off behind the dam. So that means that all the people down in the valley there, they don't get any water. They need water. They depend on the fishing industry. So now they have to come and work for you because there's no more water there, no more fish. And you give them minimum wage and a promise for the future as long as they look up to you. So they'll know they're completely dependent. But keep them moving. If a black person in the Northwestern Hemisphere starts getting that second generation house, then you come through and say you got to build a highway. That's the technique.
You are listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network, new black media for the new millennium.
All right. I think we are back. I think we're still connected.
Yes, sir.
11:02 p.m.
Yes, sir. We still connected.
Still on rocking and rolling. Is Jay still on the line? I'm curious. Is she still on the line, Mr. Reed?
Let me check the board. No, I believe she dropped off. Yes, she did.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask a question. Okay, cool.
All right, Mr. Reed, I sent you three clips through email. Could you play those three clips for us in succession?
Yes, sir. Give me just a moment. If you want to set them up, I'll have them.
Okay. Yes, I think we got... D, you sent me three clips earlier today. I think they're all three of Mr. Fuller talking about politics and a few other things, if I'm not mistaken. So we just want to run those.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to, you know... our program is really based off the code that Mr. Fuller has... so eloquently elicited, as far as like racism, white supremacy, basically being able to have an actual code of conduct, a code of basically countering the system. So this is just in the whole realm of politics and other different things on how to deal with victims and other different things surrounding politics and other issues dealing with victims of racism, white supremacy. So
Are the clips on social labeled? Media?
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Well, depends on what we mean by social media. I say all media is social if it has to do with people. So it's just a way of people interacting with people. Social media is when two people are standing on a bus stop talking to each other. Good morning. How are you? That's social media, I guess. What's the definition of social media? See, it comes down to what is the definition. And, you know, when I first heard the term, I asked the question. I guess I still ask it. What is social media?
Yes.
Politics, which is one of the areas of activity in the textbook, means what? People interaction. You know, some people say that, hey, I'm not into politics. Well, I say, how can you talk to a person and not be political? Because politics is nothing but one person interacting with another person, directly or indirectly. You're in politics. That's political. According to what? According to compensatory logic. According to the logic that came with the universe. Politics is any interaction between people. Social is what? Well, how can you be social unless you're interacting with something or somebody? You know, so I guess,
depends on what the definition is.
Yes, sir. Okay.
So whomever is using the term should be able to explain the terms that he or she is using.
Okay.
Black people were called basically colored people. And for a long time, when I was coming up, we were called Negroes. In fact, black people, a lot of black people didn't want to be called black. They
yes,
say, I'm not
I
black.
I have addressed that.
I'm a
Negro.
I've addressed hair. In the
particularly,
I've addressed
black clothing.
People that consider themselves sophisticated. You know, they didn't like the word black. It was people like Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad, really, who said, white people call themselves white. What's wrong with you? You can't call yourself black. I mean, you know, what's wrong with black? Most of the universe is black. I mean, you know, what's wrong with black? So, therefore, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the use of words. Now, we can call ourselves Moors. We can call ourselves anything. But it's not what we call ourselves. It's what the white supremacists say their mission is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the white supremacists will say, oh, you're not black people. You're not colored people. You're not Negroes. You are just people who are called Moors. Is that what you want to call yourself? And we will say in unison, yes. Well, looking at the white supremacist agenda, I don't think the changing of our titles will affect what they do where black people are concerned. I think they would look at each other and say, okay, you want to call yourself Moors? Go ahead. But you know what? You will do what I tell you to do because
that's right.
I'm a white supremacist. Now, for those who want to try that, since it hasn't been tried across the board, I don't think most of the black people on the planet are called Moors and descendants of ancient Kemet, because now we got to look at what happened to the original Moors of ancient Kemet. From the latest reports I've gotten, white supremacy means white supremacy. It means that the white supremacists, I believe, are not what you might call ignorant, that there were some people called Moors, but there were people called Moors, there were people called Zulus, there were people called all kinds of things who had color in their skin. And the white supremacists, according to all the histories that I've ever heard, didn't bypass them on account of what label they took. The white supremacists stomped on every last one of them, including going all through what we call our ancient civilization, quote-unquote, of Timbuktu. Look at it now. And the white supremacists, they know where Timbuktu is. I mean, it's not like that's a mysterious place that they can't approach. I mean, I'm talking about reality.
Yes, sir.
I'm not talking about pageantry.
Yes, sir.
I'm talking about white supremacy, the most awesome force this world has ever seen. But at the same time, under compensatory logic, anybody who wants to call themselves Moors and think that that's a protective cloak against the awesome power of white supremacy, go ahead and do so. And we will see what the result will be.
All right. We'll see what the
result. We will see if that will be a shield against what the white supremacists do.
Yes. My question is, recently I've been noticing on television, mostly cable news, that people, that victims of white supremacy who have read your book and who are attempting to produce justice on these programs by getting on these programs and saying some of your code words, they've been given more and more attention. And I've also noticed with this increased amount of attention, they're also, it seems that they're being baited into arguing and bickering with other victims of white supremacy. And oftentimes this is being positioned as for entertainment purposes. My question for you is, what advice do you have for victims of white supremacy who are attempting to produce justice by getting on these discussion panels? My question is, what advice do you have for them to avoid being baited into bickering and arguing with other victims as opposed to focusing on the white supremacists themselves?
Mr. Fuller?
Never argue with other victims of racism about race, racism, and or counter-racism. That's a solid part of the code, because that is a serious problem. Slaves chained together at the bottom of the slave ship, arguing about whose chains are shinier than the other chains. It goes nowhere. A part of the compensatory code, making up for what's missing, is to eliminate all of that altogether. Mm-hmm. There can be exchanges of views, and that's all that they are, because in the economic section of the textbook, it says you do exchange views, but you're just exchanging views. That's all I'm doing right now. I gave an illustration earlier in this program. One of the first people to look at my book, one of the very first, that's the original basic edition, the 1984 edition that came out in the 1984 edition. One of the people that looked at the book was a black male, and he said, Fuller, I looked at this book that you have out here, and I don't see anything in it that I can use. And I said, that's fine. That's excellent. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, because if you didn't see anything in there that you can use, it means that there's nothing in the book that you can use, which means you don't use things that you don't need. You said that there's nothing in it that you can use, so therefore you pay no attention to nothing that's in this book. The book is not for you. The book is for people who can use it. And it's the same way in any discussion about how to solve the race problem among the victims. You just exchange views. You do not argue. You do not try to convince anybody of anything. You just say what your views are, and the person will say, well, what you just told me, I don't think I can use it. That's the way it's supposed to work. And if the person that you're talking to, you're trying to get something from them, and they don't tell you anything that you can use, you just say, well, you haven't told me anything that I can use, so we'll just move on to something else. So you just change the subject and start talking about something else. It shouldn't ever be, ever, in any circumstance, be an exchange of views that leads to an argument. Arguments go nowhere, because we're all still victims. No one has ever solved the race problem. Every now and then you'll hear somebody say that they have come up with a solution to the race problem. Well, that doesn't make sense. How can they have the solution and the problem is still here?
Well, that was the incomparable Mr. Miller Fuller Jr. dropping some knowledge, as he does per usual, on the compensatory concept program. Hey, Paradox, when did that program come on, you know?
I think it comes on Wednesdays.
Yeah, so anybody that's interested can check it out. But yeah, it's very interesting, because back to what we was discussing earlier, either racism exists or it doesn't. There's some things that we have to come to grips with as black people that are classified as black or forced into the classification as black, however you want to see it, and kind of get to the reality of what our situation is so we can deal with it effectively. A lot of this got to do with diagnosis and psychosis to me. We're going crazy with our wrong diagnosis of what the problem is and what we think the solutions are. And when we see that other victims of racism don't respond the way we want them to respond to how the system drives us crazy, then it drives us into an actual mental state too that is not productive or constructive. So I would just say to any victims out there of racism that is listening to this program, it is not our we are not trying to antagonize or to change anybody's belief system. We're just trying to give you a different point of view of what the system is and how the system works. That's all. You know, take what you will from it, but we're not here to kind of like, you know, force anyone to believe in any one thing when it comes down to racism, white supremacy. Do you guys have any responses to what you just heard?
I would just say you can get his books on producejustice.com. That's at go to his website, producejustice.com, and definitely pick up his books and read those. And I think it's very, very constructive information.
I got clarity on the slave chains, so thank you for that. That gave further context, and I understand the point that he was making. We could say the same thing today. Like, let's say it's two brothers on the street arguing about who got the biggest, shiniest rims on their car, you know, and that. So right, I get right. that. I get that context, but I have a question towards reducing conflict, which he just talked about, and this is how I tried to reduce conflict with other black people when we talk about politics. Because for many people, politics is emotional. It's emotional game. But like he was saying, everything is politics. And I never heard mm-hmm. those clips before. But that is something I have said consistently, is that people activity area number 6 controls all other 8 areas. Everything you do is political in this system. And so I appreciate him saying that. But in terms of conflict, like I say on my program, I do a political program. I do vote. I give my reasons and my strategies for voting, why it's logical for me to vote. But the person, like I engineer all the programs on the network, so Brother Dave is a political atheist. He don't vote. And so he gives the reasons on why he don't vote. There should be no conflict between me and Dave. I should work in all people activity areas that I feel proficient in to counter the system in whatever way I deem necessary or possible. And it's up to him to counter the same system in different areas that he's proficient in. There should be no conflict between me and him. I shouldn't be calling him stupid or insinuating he's dumb because he cast a ballot. He shouldn't be insinuating that I'm stupid and I'm dumb because of what activity I'm doing, because we're both trying to counter the system. We just got different viewpoints, different strategies perhaps, and I think it went by me taking that view now, because I always before, man, I would like get into arguments with people about why I vote and why they should vote, but then I learned, you know what, they counter the system in this particular way, and they're very good and valuable team member in that particular area. So I'll not criticize what they're doing, and I'll just stick to my areas and the people who want to work with me in those areas, and there's no conflict between, we're all should be on the same team.
Definitely. Again, you can reach us on Instagram at code_breakers at 1865. You can also email us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com. And you can reach us on Twitter at codebreakers191. And, of course, we're on blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can select Code Breakers and listen to some of our podcasts, et cetera. T, did you have anything?
Oh, Paradox, real quick. Uh-huh. I actually did a video. It's on our Black Talk Radio channel about Moors, because I was coming across Moors who were looking at other black people like something wrong with them. And I did research I did a research on the word, what they call that, the etymology of the word. Uh-huh. And the word is a Greek word, and guess what the word mean? The word mean black.
Black. Yep.
So you talking about other black people calling themselves black, and you claiming more when that's the name Europeans gave you, and it mean black. So why are you arguing with other black people about what they calling themselves? And I appreciate Mr. Fuller pointing that out. That ain't never stopped the racists from exterminating anybody because of what they was referring to themselves as.
Mass confusion. Just mass confusion.
T still, okay, you still on too.
Yeah, I mean, I got into a wasn't, you know, I kind of try to watch the way I deliver my messages to people. Like, I had a similar situation to D where, you know, older lady classified as black, you know, she came up to me, she said, you know, did you vote, young man? And I said, no, I did not. And so she said, well, why not, you know? And I said, well, the choice was two criminals. And so she said, well, can you explain? I said, well, if we're going to talk about Hillary, we talk about somebody who deleted, I mean, amongst many other things, but I said, you know, someone who deleted emails under subpoena. And so her response was, well, why does that matter? And I said, well, you know, and again, I try to watch how I respond. So, you know, very calm and collective. And I, you know, I'd simply say, well, if I had done the same thing, do you think I would have gone to jail? And immediately her response was pretty much the same thing what she said before. Well, why, who cares? You know, why does that matter? And I just simply repeated myself again. I said, well, you know, If it was you or myself, what do you think would happen? And then, so she changed the subject. So at least, hopefully, I might have planted a seed, you know, for whatever that may manifest. But I think that, again, to you gentlemen's point, I think we just have to be careful about how we have the conversation and not look at it as a debate or a argument. And if someone wants to use that word argument, I would simply correct them and say, no, we're just having a discussion. I've done that before. I've told people, no, this is not an argument. We're just talking like two grown adults. We're just having a conversation. And you'd be surprised at how that changes the whole outcome of that discourse. So I just want to share that with you all and the listeners out there. And I know I'm in a lot of regards, I'm preaching to the choir, but very important.
Yeah, that's good information, definitely. I think I will say that the election is getting a little tight. DC. Dr. Wells might be right. them rural areas, they say they coming out a lot in the rural areas to vote. So it's kind of them Democrats, they a little nervous. They're getting a little nervous.
The ancestor of Dr. Wells and wants us to not be confused about racism. Black people are extremely confused about racism. We don't know which way is up when it comes down to these white people.
Clearly.
And this is just proof.
We will get blamed, by the way. We will get blamed if she loses.
I already know that I'm going to be looked at crazy.
Yep.
It's your fault.
Yep.
It's people like you. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. This whole thing is always set up to blame victims for everything.
Yeah, all blacks who did not vote will be ostracized in this country.
And I'm willing to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Cause see that I was about to say something. I'm not going to do that. But I will say this. I think that if this doesn't elicit a a mental shift when victims talk to each other about racism, at least not about agreeing about counter strategies. I mean, we can get into that. That's something different. But knowing that this country that you talk about is so great, you know, I'm listening to the victim known as Stephen A. Smith, right? On First Take, and how he always elicits this whole thing about how great this country is and how great America is and this and that other. And you know, I don't know if he's just saying it or whether he really believes it, but I really think that he believes it in a fundamental way about what other country is better for you as a black person. Tell me where you're going to go. See, you know, you get a lot of victims that would try to, you know, bait you into that whole thing about, well, what you going to do? You don't got nothing. You don't know what you're doing. This, blah, blah, blah. I make this. And see, that's where we get in. That's where we get into this whole thing about shiny toys again. And that's why that clip was so powerful, because at the end of the day, you are beholden to the system just like I'm beholden to the system. We got different things that we're doing, but it's the same thing. You don't run nothing just like I don't run anything. So we're basically in the same boat. That's, now there's different comforts that he may experience that I don't have no way of experiencing. But when it comes down to the power dynamic, you know, that's pretty much the same deal. You cannot mobilize black people and put them somewhere where they can feel safe based off the strength of Stephen A. Smith. That's just not a possibility. You don't do that. You don't have the power to do that. And, you know, and then this whole thing about black, you know, one person speaking for the whole black community, you know, like when he trumps his cohort there, what's his name, Max Kellerman? You know, sometimes he'll tell him, hey, you know, I know better than you because I'm a black person. And it's weird because he came back at him and he was just like, yeah, but, you know, there's different understandings of what blackness is. I'm just like, wow. See, because that's what I'm saying. Like, he's like, well, you know, I'm telling you that I'm more woke than you are because, you know, I deal with black people that's different than you. That's basically what he was telling him. So, you know, you can't speak for all black folk, you know. But anyway, that was just interesting. I just thought that was just something that, you know, very, very interesting when you're dealing with so many different ways of how we view this thing called racism, white supremacy, and we're seeing it right now, right in front of us, the dynamics of it. You know, I'm looking at Huffington Post and they got Fright Night up. Now, come on, man, Fright Night. Like, this is a horror show that they're going through. Like butts are getting tight. Like people are getting extremely extremely afraid.
That's that,
like,
liberal. That's that liberal media. You know why? Because he's about to take Florida. He's about to take Florida.
Oh no, Florida's took. That's done.
They scared of that.
Florida's a wrap.
We lost North Carolina.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, what do we think this was? Like, what do you think this is? This country was built on racism.
If you start to project forward and just hypothetically say he wins from watching the study, and we're studying white people and how they react to different things, you're going to see a lot of reaction.
Right.
A lot of just different ways they're going to use language to justify it, to adjust to it. Because this is their family. He's their family. So, you know, what's funny about it is that there won't be any riots. They're not burning down those state houses.
Oh, no.
No,
not at all.
They adjust, they adapt, they talk themselves into it, and then they talk everybody else into it.
No, Saturday Night Live would just have jokes.
Yep. I think they just said apparent winner of Florida.
Yeah, it would just keep going on. It would keep going on into here, into, you know, the next 4 years of having, you know, Donald Trump in office. You know,
he might be going Florida and North Carolina, so he might be winning this thing for real.
Either way it go, we are in for a shift.
Well, it's a perfect response to Barack Obama.
Yeah, this is the response.
It's the expected response.
Well, who clowned?
What do you expect after 8 years of Obama?
I mean, what I mean is that from an optics perspective, when you look at how Barack Obama, President Obama, clowned him all through these years and made him kind of look like a joke, just it's just interesting just how
he has to get the keys to this white. It's just a weird visual. When you see that man giving, you know, just, I mean, it's all theater, of course, but it's just a funny thing to look at power plays and how they maneuver different things. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Yep, he just won Iowa, Ohio, Indiana, North Carolina, oof, Florida.
Yeah.
I think it might be a wrap for her. She can't lose another. I don't think she can lose another. She can't lose another state.
Hmm.
I don't know. I've never seen them say Trump apparent winner. That's on MSNBC. I don't know what. I've never seen it apparent. Either you are or you're not, I thought.
They said apparent winner win. Where this they said calling in for Trump?
They said apparent winner. I don't. That's not. I don't even know what that means.
What channel is that?
No, I mean for Florida, MSNBC, just for the state of Florida.
Oh, okay. Is that, you know, what's crazy? You know, like, it how they have
rejected.
You know, like how they have the Sunday ticket. I don't know if anyone's ever had DirecTV, but they have like 6, 7, 8 games on at one time, and you can go between the different screens. They have the election mix, and literally there's 6 different channels on this one channel. So they've got CNN, BBC, Fox News, MSNBC, Bloomberg, and for some odd reason, Comedy Central in this mix.
You know, I think about the
the peso, the Mexican peso is down 7%. No lie, man.
Oh man, this is
don't get no better than this. I knew you was waiting on this, boy.
Man, this is just like the Empire, you know, Emperor Palpatine to the fullest, you know, talking about ultimate and crazy power. Like, I can talk any way I want. Like, it shouldn't even be this close. Like, listen, this is the thing where regardless of, like I said, regardless of whatever,
but you know what, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you see how you're contextualizing it. You're not going to get that context, right? From a white supremacist context, it's going to be, this man can say anything. Whiteness trumps.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They're going to say is that, oh, it's the black people didn't come. It's going to be other things within the system to make it seem like it's going to give you a reason why. No one's going to get up there and say white, you know, anyway. It's just a funny thing.
I don't understand. Like, people act like this country is just New York City and Los Angeles. Like, that's not the country that you live in. Like, this is not it. Electoral College, there's 538 people that elect presidents. That's all I gotta say.
He winning in Christian states.
That's all I gotta say, man.
Utah, Mormon states.
It is what it is, man.
They love them anyway. You know how that is, but
yeah, it is what it is. I mean, you know, people that think that I mean, and you know, Hillary was smiling. She was all good just a few hours ago. Now, I know she was feeling good.
They ain't smiling.
They ain't showed her face. I ain't seen her face.
Man, these folks are backpedaling. You know what they remind me of is when Mitt Romney lost 4 years ago on the Republican side.
Yeah, shocked.
When he ran up, when he hit those 9 states in a row, it was like they were stunned.
Shocked. What were you about to say, T?
Says, I was looking at this Mexican peso, man. It's crazy. This is amazing how the elections have so much impact on financial markets.
You know, it's mindset. It's back to what you're saying, participation, mindset. people's minds are influenced by what this is. This is just taking a heartbeat on the country that we are currently in right now. This is what it comes down to. This is the country that you live in, people.
I mean,
you are clearly just like Mr. Scotty Reed always say, you are clearly behind enemy lines. Rank, file, serial number. Bottom line.
And this is your pendulum swinging back.
It's
a hard swing back too. And I think the House and the Senate is going to stay on the Republican side as well.
Yeah, no.
So they're gonna have absolute power to fill in all your Supreme Court justices, your lower courts that they haven't filled yet. What else? They can repeal pretty much everything he's done in the last 8 years. So.
Yeah, no confusion.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the people who voted for him will continue to suffer. We start talking about economics anyway and trade.
You know, it's
the cheap labor. We know where the cheap labor is at. It ain't changing. So,
you know, like I said, I know we're going to see, because I have told some people that I did not participate in voting, and I know that there's going to be some people that's going to give me some hard looks tomorrow, like you know, the whole election fell on my vote. And I'm just, you know.
Well, you good. You can explain to them that your state went blue, so you're good.
well, you're good.
Explain them the electoral college and the 10 delegates.
She barely won Virginia, so the whole DMV, as far as I know, went blue. The whole area went. So yeah, you know, you don't have to get in my face with all that. But let me stop. That's what I'm saying. Just they're gonna still feel the need to say something.
Yeah, they still will, though.
Yeah, they still will say something. No doubt about
right.
it. Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, like.
But it gives you a chance, though, to explain why it doesn't matter. What are you going to really see that's going to impact your life? Doesn't really. I mean, when you think about what the Democrats have done to us versus the Republicans, I never weighed it out. But is it any different?
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I know there's a lot more social programs and some other things that they've done, but I'm not sure in the bigger picture.
It's gonna be some crying. It's gonna be some gnashing of teeth, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's gonna be a pretty sad state of affairs, because nobody believed that this was even a possibility. It's clearly a possibility now. Like I said, we don't still know if this is gonna happen or not. But
well, she was leading by 6 points going into today. She was up by 6. But they will find, like I said before, they will find things to blame.
Well, they should blame themselves, don't you think? And I mean, blame themselves. I'm talking about the DNC. I mean, you cheated. You did all kind of underhanded things. You know this person was a criminal. I mean, all the things she did to black people. And I'm sure there'll be some black people that'll try to blame the 30 and under black voting crowd, because these young people, in my opinion, said that I have principles and values I'm not willing to compromise, and Donald Trump don't scare me no more than she does, because they're both racist, and so I'm not participating. That's who they'll blame, but ultimately the blame belongs to the Democrats for shoving a criminal onto the top of the ticket. So the blame, in my opinion, rightly, belongs on them. But you're right, they're gonna try to blame it on young black people being naive and whatnot, and they probably got more clarity than everybody else.
It's hard to lie to young people without them seeing your nonsense. Mr. Reed, is this the first time that there's ever been a situation where there's been a family situation where somebody already ran that was married, and then the other person ran that was that was also part of the same marriage ran for
the Kennedys, office, right? The Kennedys, you know, and they assassinated both Kennedys, those brothers.
They did that?
That's the only ones I can remember where two members of the same family, of course, those were brothers, and you're talking about husband and wife, but from the same family.
Yeah, I'm talking about husband and wife.
Well, then, again, the Bushes, though, H.W., the father, who about 90-something years old, he won. He was in the when he came in right after Reagan, and then he lost the second term, or he wasn't selected the second term. So I have to say there's been at least three instances of family members who have run for that office.
You know,
does that answer your question? I'm not sure I understood, but did that answer it?
No, I was just talking about a husband and a wife. I know that there's never been. I was just trying to see if there. I was thinking, I didn't know whether Eleanor Roosevelt ran or if she, because I know she was real, real popular.
No, I don't think they was allowing. I'm not sure.
Not back then.
Yeah.
Not me. Just even run. So there haven't even been a situation where she even ran or...
No.
Like, I knew she didn't get elected.
Not that I could recall. Now, there was woman who ran in the 1800s, and I think Frederick Douglass was her vice president. And I just know that because New Abolitionist Radio and how we try to connect the past with the present in terms of slavery. So there was a woman. Hillary Clinton was not the first woman to run... for president. That was, I forget the white woman's name, but Frederick Douglass was her running mate.
Right, got you. Okay. I just wanted to kind of just make sure that this is something that's not common. So, yeah, this appears to be something that's going to, catch everybody by surprise. They are saying that he is basically... what did they say? 97% the winner now. I am starting to see that. Now I don't know what that means exactly, but
Florida.
The whole thing they're talking about.
The whole thing.
He's going to win the Electoral College, but he's going to lose the popular vote. So
yeah, but they got seven states that they can't call yet.
Okay,
I think if he becomes if he's selected the next CEO of USA Inc., it would be a good thing. Towards less confusion among black people.
Absolutely.
Well, at least it'll get us a chance to see how we react to things.
I think Trump is the perfect choice for USA Inc. What they say on the cows, the three T's, just add four T's for, add Trump in there.
No, that's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like people classified as black, we just have a problem responding to things and tend to be stuck in the same type of situation. Like, not really, like, for example, bracing the same party that has done us in for years. You know, people vote along these so-called party lines for almost like it's expected of you to vote Democrat. You know, I'm not saying one way or the other, but without even thinking about it, you know, it's just automatic. No matter who's in there, we vote Democrat. You know.
Hey, you know Roland Martin having a watch party here in D.C., right?
Yeah, he over at Mulebone.
I know, man. I almost want to get dressed and just head out. I just... No, let me not do that.
That would be interesting to see, though.
It's going to be a lot of slow singing, a lot of flower bringing. I mean, straight out of Biggie.
But again, think about the person that you... Think, like Mr. Reedy and even just said it, think about who it is, though. Are you really mad?
They was going to go there and party. They was about to celebrate.
This woman wouldn't even come on his show. I know they've done some things. I know they've done some things behind the scenes, but
my goodness.
Last call for alcohol, bro. DJ, the DJ about to shut it down.
It's not funny. This is not funny. Not. This This is not funny, but it's just the
think
brain.
About it. People are mad about Hillary Clinton now. Like, it's nothing to be mad about. That's what's crazy about it. Like, you know, if people are actually sad tomorrow, if black people are sad tomorrow, that says a lot. If they're emotional, if they're upset, that's going to be hard for me to process.
It'll probably rain tomorrow.
But it will give me a chance to talk about it, to say what's the difference. I mean, what are we talking about here? So it will give you a chance. So I would suggest anyone who's listening, definitely get some things prepared to be able to respond. If you choose to respond, I'm not telling you to, but if you decide to respond, definitely have your talking points together and your thoughts together on, it may give you a chance to talk to people about racism, especially if he wins. It'll give you a chance definitely to discuss it, because I think, you know, I don't know. I'm going to leave it there. I'll leave that there.
You know, even if he doesn't win or whatever, this still comes out that Hillary Clinton is the victor. The mental shift has already begun. Like, there's clearly something to this election that there's already been basically codified into the brain now. Like, people should know exactly what the mindset of this particular country is, and when we're talking on this program, kind of figuring it out with other victims of racism, white supremacy, this is for us to get a better and clearer view of what this country is. This is not for us to get into fighting with each other. So please try to not blame people, not to fight with each other based off what these white people want to do and how they want to run this particular country. We already talked about it earlier. This is all about participation. This is all about participation on who's going to be and whose policy is going to be coming down on how to dominate and manage.
You think a lot of these Hispanic, the Latin community, you think they're gonna get kind of a dose of a wake up call? Not all of them. Some of them obviously are woke, but I just wonder about some of the people that I know, as far as them understanding what this place is. I know they about, you know, a lot of them are about working, getting money, small businesses, doing their job, but. When things like this happen, that's what I'm saying. We're conditioned for it in my mind. But agreed. some of the other groups here, they're not necessarily prepared. I don't know if they really understand what this means. They do a very good job of creating illusions. So I think and people will figure it out, obviously, but you know, you're gonna feel something. I will say that.
Hey, what just came to my mind, Paradox, is what y'all was talking about the last program, and Rick just not understanding what Negan was putting down. He just didn't understand. What's her name? Michonne understood.
Michonne?
Mm-hmm. she understood. Yeah. So that's what you're saying, that these people that you're talking about, they just don't get it, but they might understand now. That's that baseball bat busting them upside the head.
I mean, blunt trauma, Mr. Reed. Blunt trauma to the head. And we got to sit and watch it. They're making you watch it. Like, you sit in front of the TV, it's almost like seeing somebody get banged in the head over and over and over and over again. And it's going to be people that just going to wake up in the morning and be like, did I just dream this? Did this really happen? This really, really happen?
Got a hangover going to hit in the morning. Oh, I think I might drive down to D.C. tonight.
Jeez, whiz, man. We are behind enemy lines, man. Behind enemy lines, people. It's just true. Codify your behavior as you see fit within the system of racism, white supremacy.
And you know what? And you made a good point that even if she does win, and this is what I've been telling someone for about 10 years now, I said this Tea Party thing, whatever they call themselves, they got new names and stuff now, but alt-right and other things, I don't think people understand how it's growing. And this is going to be a perfect, like you were saying before, you're really going to see the growth of it.
you know, when you, especially when you're able to see the votes, you're looking at the, you're looking at every district and every county, you're starting to see like, oh, okay, so something's going on. And again, for non-white people, the better you get an understanding of the white society in this country and really worldwide, and as they struggle and suffer economically, specifically economically, and then from a genetic perspective, as far as non-whites in this country at higher levels, this is what it looks like. I mean, this literally is doctored. Please go and get what's her book?
The ISIS Papers.
The ISIS Papers. I think you can get it on Amazon. They have the hardcover and the paperback. But absolutely, it really gets you to get clarity around some of this stuff. And she really focuses on the Jews, the Semites, or the Jewish religion in Germany. And you know, when whites, regardless of money, start to feel or see certain things, they have a reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And this is something that she gets to at the psychological level. And I don't, and unfortunately, obviously, we don't really look at it that way. But it's deeper than a lot of things. When she gets into the psychology of it and understand how these people function, and they will blow up their economy up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't have a problem rebuilding and doing things over again just to get things the way they want. And we've had historical evidence of that, so it's just interesting.
We already talked about the Electoral College. Due to the split of this particular country, if they was to kind of give it back to Hillary, I mean, either way it go, they may try to manage the situation and say how can we manage this so-called volatile situation the best? Who would be the best person to put in office? Who has the most propensity to handle this for the next 4 years? I think that this is going to go higher as far as when they make the decision on who should be, as Mr. Reed said, the next CEO of this particular country of racism, America with the triple K's, Inc. Like, this is real serious. This is a regime shift. Like, this is something that, you know, and I've well, first of all, I don't know if President Obama understands the legacy of slavery to the fullest extent, but I know that his wife does, and I know that she has a look on her face, and it's the same thing that she said when she first got into the office, because she couldn't believe it either. What did she say? I'm so proud of my country. I thought that this would never happen. Well, I forgot what it was that they railed on her. They got on her about that, of course. You know, white people, but she said something that was very, very clear about how racist this country was, the acknowledgement of it, and that the fact that her husband became the first black president of the United States, the acknowledgement of how difficult that is to comprehend for black folks that's been struggling and has a history of struggling in this particular nation, outside of the immigrant experience of black folks that come to this country.
Yeah, it's almost like the Jeremiah Wright thing.
Absolutely.
Thing, you know.
Absolutely. Like.
But this is going to embolden folks, though. You know. So.
I think this is pretty much a done deal. I just, they're reporting now Trump, 78% chance of winning, Hillary 22%. I think it's pretty much a done deal.
So they have decided, huh, Mr. Reed?
Hey, and well, they got a few more states to count, unless there's a bunch of electronic vote flipping of monumental proportions. I don't see Hillary pulling this out. I really don't. And so just think about this. In December, the president-elect, Donald Trump, will be in a federal courtroom to defend himself in a civil lawsuit where he is alleged to have raped a 13-year-old girl, beat her, and threatened to kill her.
Oh, boy.
It's plain and in your face, man. It's like the mask has been pulled off.
Peel it off. Just peel it off. This is what this is. This is what power looks like. If you ever want to see it, where you just, it's just nothing that you could do about it. This is what it looks like, people. This is what it looks like. And I know it's very, very hard for victims of racism to understand. But the thing is, we have to understand what we're dealing with. And that's what this is. Even with Hillary winning, that's what this is. This is just where it's not, they're not lying to you. You just see it in front of your face. So all these white people that you see in front of you, you know, laughing and kikiing it up all, you know, no, you need to understand what this is. They got people crying. They got people, they're showing people crying right now. Black people crying. They are shocked. They look like they at a funeral.
Wow.
Yeah. It's woo. Man.
I'm surprised that I'm not hearing gunshots. Y'all know I'm deep behind enemy lines in North Carolina.
You are, hey, yes, sir.
Maybe when they call it, I might hear the celebratory shots ring out and all that. I'm on red alert down here.
Oh my goodness!
You know, it's funny. I thought about the same thing this evening. I was like, if Trump wins, I was expecting to hear those shots too, man.
I just go back to Dr. Wells and the Blackburn Institute. We sat there and looked at her. Like we just sat there and just Dr. Wells predicted this, Mr. Reed. Sat there right in front of us and told us to our face. I say hello to your next president. Just as calm, you know how she is, just as calm as Sunday morning. It's just, my goodness, man. There was people that, you know, that I know they couldn't see this. I know that, like I said, Roland Martin, he gonna do a lot of blaming tomorrow. You know that. He's gonna do a lot of blaming black. I told you how to vote. I told you, man.
What is he called?
He's on TV One.
I know that, but what is he having?
What's the name of his program? Paradox. What's the name of his program?
No. I'm saying, what is he doing tonight? What is his event?
You talking about where he's at right now?
Yeah. What is his event that he's doing?
He has a voting party going on right now.
Voting party. Okay.
Yeah. He has a. Like a live party, like they're I know they were there to celebrate. I know they had this thing going totally different than what it did. But I guess when he flipped, and man, God knows this would have been over. If he won Virginia, it would have been over. This would have been a wrap. This would have been it. They would have been like, yeah, this is over. No reason to even stay awake. Just this is a done deal.
Well, speaking of that, I think that will be a good segue in the final comments as we get ready to shut it down.
Well, victims of racism, people that are classified as black, people who are forced into the classification of black, immigrants and all between. People in the black diaspora, you know, I know a lot of you guys are feeling pain right now, and hopefully, you know, we can come together and understand that racism is very, very real. It's a real thing. It's something that never went away, and that we get more clarity about the system. And that we continue to build code and not to continue to turn on each other and blame each other for this election. This election is not black people's fault. This election is not black people's fault. This is just the mobilization of the empire of racism, white supremacy. You are not in friendly confines here in America or globally, for that matter. Those are my comments. This is D.
T here. What I would say is keep your eye on the ball. Don't let this be the end all, do all. It'll be interesting to see what happens, and this will be very telling of the system. We see what happens if indeed Trump does take it, and Trump, will he actually prosecute Hillary like you claim he will? Basically, the results of that particular outcome will also say a lot about the system. So keep eye on the ball, and let's see what continues to develop, and stay safe.
Paradox, you there? Paradox. Okay. Let's see here. Your mic is unmuted. Did you want to leave them with some final comments? Okay, something might be going on. So, Dee, did you want to tell the people how they can find y'all online and get in contact with the show?
Yeah, you can reach us at Codebreakers 191 on Twitter. You can also reach us at Codebreakers at gmail.com. I think that's the actual email address. But, yeah, hopefully everything is okay with Paradox over there. I know he said he was about to do something, so hopefully he will check with him about the program, make sure everything is okay with him. But, yeah, Mr. Reed, if you wanted to share any final details, I'd like to hear your final thoughts, and then we can close up, sir.
Well, I'll just say what I said earlier. Now, I did predict that Hillary Clinton would win. I just thought that the people most in charge were happy with the mass murder she was spreading around the globe and the moves she was making in the area of economics, practicing capitalism, which is really slavery. And so the same thing that kind of took me aback. I did not expect them to let such an uncodified racist become the CEO in the face of the racist empire. That was totally unexpected. But like I stated earlier today, victims of this system, you should have the same approach. You should feel no different than when you woke up today. You was in a system of racism, and regardless of who got chosen, they were going to be a white racist. Okay, so it didn't make no difference. The only thing is, absolutely, now is you got to figure out if it's Donald Trump, which I think it will be. So how do you counter him? And I just really think it's great that you have an uncodified racist on as chosen as the CEO, because Hillary Clinton is so refined with it, and those refined ones are the most dangerous. So those are my thoughts.
All right, so this has been the Code Breakers. I'm D, and for Paradox, and
T.
Until next time, stay safe.